We have a couple recognitions tonight that I'm doing, and then a couple that the manager or the deputy manager will be doing. Going to start out with the SEIA crew. So can I have them come forward, the SEIA crew? Up here, guys, and turn around and face the people.
You're good.
Mike and Aaron Carricker and their three small children. Noah, raise your hand. Logan and Harper. Yay, Harper. We're out on the water in their boat, the SEIA, when Mike recognized and realized the passengers on the nearby whale-watching boat were calling for help and waving their arms frantically. The SEIA crew approached their 35-foot whale-watching boat, the Big Red, quickly but cautiously as he heard people yell, "We're sinking." The Carrickers managed to get hold of 14 of the 18 Big Red passengers onto their small boat. Other boats soon came to assist in the rescue. Meanwhile, the Big Red sank in just a few minutes. There was no loss of life. We're here to honor and thank the Carricker family for their quick thinking and actions which led to the rescue of passengers aboard the Big Red. I would assume that the passengers on the sinking boat, we're happy to see you. Next is, I need George Crowder and Tommy Fabrick and Steve Hamilton. On January 7th of this year, Steve Hamilton, raise your hands, collapsed while he was playing tennis at the Alaska Club. Thanks to quick thinking and life-saving efforts of three men, George Crowder, George, Tommy Fabrick, Fabrick, I know your dad, so I should get this right somehow, and Pete Berrigan is alive today. The three men called 911, started CPR, and used a defibrillator. Firemen arrived on scene and took over, and by the time Steve arrived at Bartlett Hospital, he had a weak pulse. He is now fully recovered. We want to thank and honor these three men and Mr. Ferguson, who could not join us tonight. Gentlemen, we thank you for your bravery and your willingness to help.
And if I could call up Andy Miguel. Andy Miguel is the CBJ safety officer, and he was recently recognized by the National Safety Council as one of their rising stars for safety in 2016. The organization is an organization of 50,000 members. He was one of 40 people that were recognized nationwide. As the city safety officer, he works with all city departments, empowered boards, all pieces of the city to develop and implement safety policies. And he was instrumental in getting the city manager to sign a citywide safety policy for the first time ever, which is a really good thing, because what we're trying to do is build a culture of safe practices. It's good for employees, good for their families, good for the departments, and good for our bottom line. And so please congratulate me, and I'd also like to call up Sherry Lane, CBJ Law Department.
It's like a million degrees in here.
It is really warm.
Sherry is a huge asset to the law department. She handles a huge workload, great output, great respect from her peers, great work with the police department as our prosecutor. And she's done many great things for the city, and we're calling her out here today to make her a little uncomfortable stand in front of you to recognize that outstanding performance. And on top of being outstanding, for the better part of the last year, she's been on the clock 24 hours a day, 7 days a week for the entire year, as an employee during the business week, and also as an on-call prosecutor for JPD. So that means when they need her for an arraignment, inconveniently while she's having breakfast on a Sunday morning or dinner on a Saturday night, she gets the call and she responds, and she does her duty, and she's been doing that for a year on top of being a great employee. Ms. Mead has advised me not one bit of complaints about that, and she's kept her chin up. We've had a lot of activity and not been fully staffed. Her performance has been outstanding and extraordinary, and we really appreciate her dedication to the city. So please join me.
Wait. Remember?
No.
Thank you. I really wanted to take this opportunity because you, the Assembly, do not interact with the criminal department, which is good. keep that up. I told Mr. Watt that she is an extraordinary employee. I want to explain what that means. It's not only that she's on 24 hours, 7 days a week, which that's quite literal. She gets called every night from the officers. She does her weekend arraignments every single weekend and did for a year almost exclusively herself. But her work product, her enthusiasm, never waned. Not once did she come to my office complaining about hours spent, and never once did she short shift the case or do less than she does for every single case, be it a theft of a Red Bull from a convenience store or a DV assault or DUI. She listens to all of the evidence. She listens to all the recordings. She talks to everybody before she makes any decision, and she does that in every case. So when I say she's extraordinary, I mean it. And she has great taste in shoes.
Yeah. You're not your phone with Dar, yeah. Yeah. Some of us have interacted with you.
You have my permission to take her to the employee cloning room.
I'm not going to know where this is.
As you can tell, we have lots of things to be thankful for in this community, and those were four instances. Ms. Becker, I am now looking for approval of the minutes.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. I move that we approve the August 1st, 2016 regular assembly minutes and ask for a unanimous approval.
Is there any objection? Manager's request for agenda changes.
Mr. Mayor, I have two. First, I would ask that under public hearing item F, ordinance 2016-09F be pulled and reset for hearing at the September 12th regular assembly meeting due to a change in grant funding from FAA.
Okay. Is there any objection to that? Okay.
Second, Ms. Mead has an agenda change.
We would like to pull item J, which is 2016-29, which was the ordinance amending the senior sales tax exemption to include marijuana. There was an error with MuniCode, which is our online code service system. They did not update the code after you amended the senior sales tax exemption. Mr. Keel actually contacted me about it this afternoon. I hadn't caught it. So when Mr. Jones was looking quickly online after we discussed marijuana and mentioned that we should update the code to change that, he was looking at the code that was online, but that was old code. So this change is actually no longer, it's not necessary, hence the request to pull it.
Is there any objection? Ben, thank you. We have public participation on non-agenda items, and these are the items that will not be up for approval tonight. And we have two people signed up, William Quayle and Bill Leidy. So let's start with Mr. Quayle.
William Quayle, 415 Willoughby Avenue. I'm just going to mention that my candidacy for the assembly, one of the things I'm working on, it's really important, you have to start putting feelers out to start to sell water, and it would satisfy our deficit of $4.9 million. It may take more than, you know, it might take four or five different contracts to satisfy the problem. It should be a number one priority to get that, sell the water, which we can do, and that's what I'm doing. I'm running for assembly.
Mr. Quayle, let's just hold the comments to your ideas, okay? Was that it?
That, and when it comes to pedicabs.
Okay.
All right. Because the pedicabs, I'm trying to get the assembly to get it on the schedule to start working on it. Today I had a very unique situation. I've turned down 75 rides, and this guy, with me being an insurance agent 40 years, I can tell he was really hurting when it comes to breathing. And he practically begged me to give him a ride, and I says, I can't take any money, and I didn't. I did give him a ride, which really cool about pedicabs. I took him all the way to the entrance of the ship, and that way they didn't have to call the EMTs on him. He was that close.
Thank you. Mr. Leidy?
Thank you, Mr. Mayor and Assembly. Bill Leedy, 227 Gastineau. When Jim Powell and Beth Gratula attended the Earth Summit in 92 in Rio, when they came back to town, they said, what are we going to do about all that we've experienced down here? Let's start a sustainable community roundtable, which they did. And every Wednesday for several years, 7 a.m., upstairs at the Fiddlehead, the Sustainable Community Roundtable met. There were about a dozen of us, more or less. And I think we were able to get installed in the comprehensive plan, the 96 revision, two components, the Chapter 6 energy component and a sustainability component. Perhaps we don't pay enough attention to those, but I feel good that we helped Jim and Beth to do something as a result of their Earth Summit experience. Now we have before us a draft Juneau Community Energy Plan, maybe as a result of those two components. It's a very good piece of work. I've attended two presentations by Tim Felstead and Steve Benke from Commission on Sustainability. Tim is one of the staff here on CDD. And in their presentation is a prominent slide that says one of the keys to an energy plan that we might want in this community is compact development. So that brings us to the prospect that we might be violating one of these very important precepts in an energy plan with the North Douglas Road extension. I've talked to you about that before. I'm here back with my final and personal request that we cancel that road project so that I can tell my kids and grandkids when they say, why did you do that? At least I can say, I showed up on August 22nd and asked that we not do that. Because when we consider capital projects like this, we have to consider not only the complete system involved, but the long-term consequences, the life cycle costs of those systems. Now, Manager Watt and I and others are engineers by training, and we know how important the complete system is, including the life cycle costs of owning and operating those, and the embodied costs of building these things. So, for example, the North Douglas Road extension will not only bring $4 million into the community, but it will cause thousands of gallons of fossil fuel to be burned in order to haul all the rock and other equipment that's out there. That's embodied energy. Every gallon that we burn, whether it's in our cars, our airplanes, or in construction equipment, is 20 pounds of CO2 in the Earth's atmosphere. And so that's my reason for asking you to terminate the project. Another good reason is that there is no master plan in place for that piece of the community. There are plans, but there is no master plan. This has not come before us in a comprehensive conversation. I also want to call all of our attention, yours and everybody here and the folks on the radio, to paying attention to this community energy plan document. It's not a plan, and I've said that to Tim and Steve. It's a catalog, a very good catalog of the history of this community's consideration of energy and some of the options that we might want to consider, but we do need to compose from this a plan or several plans, candidate plans, so that we can have a community conversation about the importance of energy to us and how we might do a better job of organizing and operating this community and the energy that we so much depend upon. So that's my request. Thank you for helping me speak to my children and grandchildren when we drive out North Douglas Road someday and see a stream of rock going off into the woods. And they say, what's that for? Why did we do that? So thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Levy. Is there any questions? Okay, thank you.
Yep.
We are now on the consent agenda. Public request for consent agenda changes other than ordinance for introduction. Is there anyone that has a request for a consent agenda change? Is there anyone from the assembly that has a request for consent agenda change? Assembly action, Mr. Keel.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. I move adoption of the consent agenda and ask unanimous consent.
Is there any objection? It is approved. Public hearing. Our first public hearing is on Ordinance 2016-23D. And I would ask that everyone here that is for here for that particular ordinance honor the process that we follow on the assembly. And when the assembly is disposed of, I'll declare a brief at ease so that we can clear the chamber a little bit if you want to and maybe get some air moving in here. But, and that means that we try to allow both sides to give their opinions. There's a discussion, a vote, and then we'll have a brief recess after that. But there should not be any cheering or booing either way. So, Ordinance 2016-23D, the clerk will read the ordinance, please.
And, Mr. Mayor, if I might, the timer is not working, so I will, if you have
do a wave.
Minute, I'll do a wave.
Okay.
An ordinance amending the City and Borough of Juneau Code to add a new title on equal rights.
Mr. Manager or Ms. Attorney?
This ordinance would make discrimination based on race, color, age, religion, sex, familial status, disability, sexual orientation, gender identity, gender expression, or national origin unlawful. By policy, CBJ finds such discrimination a threat to the health, safety, and general welfare of the citizens of the city and borough. The Committee of the Whole discussed this ordinance at its June 21st and July 25th, 2016, and August 15th, 2016 meetings, and recommended forwarding it to the full assembly for public hearing. Version D of the ordinance reflects the change to Section 4105.025E made by the Committee of the Whole at its August 15th meeting. I recommend you adopt this ordinance.
Okay, it is time for public comment. And the first that I have on my list is Mike Clemens. And we'll try to keep the comments to 2 minutes or less if possible. Please state your name and resident address, please.
Mike Clemens, 8676 Dudley Street in the Valley. And okay. I've been trying to follow this, and in spite of all the hard work that's been done, I don't think it's ready for passage. I've got 8 brief comments. First one, the city manager suggests that upon passage, there would be an effort on staff's part to provide information and education on how to implement this policy. We have a duty to get out into the community to have informal sessions with business owners and landlords. We don't expect them to be good readers of municipal ordinance, and we can help. In my opinion, the time to engage all impacted segments of the community is before enactment, not after an ordinance becomes law. Item 2, no statement of public need was recorded in the June 12th Committee of the Whole minutes that I could figure out. I believe that it needs to go back to committee to determine public need. That several constituents want this ordinance to pass doesn't constitute need. While much of society can't distinguish between wants and needs, elected officials should be held to a higher standard when enacting law. Number 3, obviously there are Supreme Court decisions. I found usage of both of them somewhat troubling. Number 4, it was stated that this ordinance is an important statement to make. To make that kind of a statement, a resolution would be better. Item 5, the original constituent request was for an ordinance for housing and employment. I think the discrimination in public accommodations, Section 020, should be deleted. Number 6, the premise of this ordinance is that only those in the protected classes need to be insulated from unlawful behavior when, in fact, abuses can occur on both sides of any transaction, as implied by the word suggesting that gender identity can be asserted for an improper purpose. There's no penalties or sanctions here. In summary, before you enact law, there has to be clear evidence that there's no other grievance remedial options available. And if I've not been persuasive, please push the effective date back to the first of the year so people can figure out what's going on, because otherwise, this is going to hit us in 30 days, and I'm not sure everybody's ready. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Furman. Any questions? Okay. Thank you. Frida Westman.
Frida Westman, 8500 North Douglas Highway, Juneau. Thank you, Assembly Mayor. I'm a member of the Alaska Native Sisterhood, which is a civil rights organization. I'm the president currently for Camp 70. I'm the past president of the Grand Camp ANS. I stand together, and my organization stands with the LGBTQ community. It is always right to do what, it is always the right time to do what is right. I'm not here today to ask for you to pass this. What I'm here today is to support you in doing this, which is right. It is undebatable that this is the right thing to do, that all people should have equal rights. It takes all of us working together to support each other in doing what is right, to have equal protection. If not all of us are protected, then none of us are protected. And it's important that this be passed. Thank you.
Thank you. Rita, can you hold on for a second? Any questions? All right. And
thank you.
Quite a few of you have indicated that you have the same feelings as Frida does, and maybe we can cut down on a little bit of the repetition of testimony. So if you do have the same, would you just give a sign with it and raise your hands? Thank you. So as I call on you, if someone's already summarized what you wanted to say, it's okay to say pass. Rebecca Smith.
Rebecca Tyson Smith, 512 Fifth Street, Juneau. Thank you, Mayor Kelch, Deputy Mayor Keough, and Assembly members for allowing the opportunity to provide testimony on the Equal Rights Ordinance before you. I do have to say I'm somewhat surprised that Juneau to date has not had equal rights language on the books, so I thank you for your diligent work in remedying that gap in the code. I'm a Christian, regular church attending, cisgendered heterosexual woman married to a cisgendered heterosexual man. If that was all you knew about me, you might think I wouldn't have a horse in this race. You'd be wrong. I want to live in a community where my friends and neighbors can't be evicted from their homes because of whom they love, how they gender present, or to whom they are married. I want to live in a community where my friends and coworkers can't lose their jobs because of where they're from, what their ethnicity is, what they believe, how they worship, or how they don't. I want to live in a community where my friends, coworkers, and neighbors can't be limited from using public facilities because of their age, a disability, the color of their skin, or the makeup of their families. I want to live in a community where we don't allow discrimination on any basis, where we don't just tolerate our differences, but accept and embrace them for how they make us a stronger community, where we love our neighbors no matter what, where we allow each other to live our lives as we see fit, as long as we're not harming others. I want to live in a community that supports all residents and doesn't limit opportunities based on who or what we are. I have chosen to live in Juneau because of the sense of community and support I find here, and I encourage the Assembly to expand the City and Borough of Juneau Code to reflect that we are a community that respects and supports all of our residents without discrimination, no matter what. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you, Rebecca. Phil Campbell.
Thank you.
Phil Campbell, 407 West 11th Street, Juneau. I'm grateful for the privilege both of addressing the Assembly and coming before you here in Deokwan, where we reside. Northern Light United Church, the church where I pastor, is a more light and reconciling congregation, which is church speak that means we welcome people of all ages, races, classes, abilities, sexual orientations, and gender identities into the life and leadership of our church, and we commit to advocating for justice and full inclusion of all people in both church and society. Thus, I'm here to advocate for the justice and full inclusion that is the intent of the Equal Rights Ordinance before you. The Equal Rights Ordinance is necessary, and that necessity is demonstrated by the large group of people here wearing the same yes buttons that I'm sporting. It's necessary because that which is protected in this ordinance has not always been the case. This ordinance assures that a commitment to equal rights is the law of the land, and without the ordinance, we cannot be confident that this always is the case, and indeed many have stories of times when this has not been the case. I appreciate the comprehensive nature of the ordinance. It's not about a single group or single issue, but about the type of community we are and want to be, one that respects the rights of all and where there is no doubt that justice and freedom are our shared values. It's also an ordinance that rightly acknowledges the particularity of life in Tlingit Ani, where municipal rule exists alongside tribal governance. Together we build a Juneau where all are welcome. At Northern Light we say, whoever you are, wherever you are on life's journey, you are welcome here. With the passage of this ordinance, all people will be similarly assured of the city and borough's commitment that all are welcome throughout Juneau. It was Theodore Parker and later Martin Luther King Jr. who said that the arc of the moral universe is long, but that it bends toward justice. I humbly submit, Assembly members, that by the passage of the Equal Rights Ordinance this night, you will facilitate yet more bending toward justice and equality for all people. Thank you. Thank you.
Quinto is next on the Haley, Harley, Quinto. Justin Parrish.
I'm Justin Parrish, and I think Rebecca, Frida, and Phil said it all. And so thank you for the passage of this ordinance, and thank you to everyone who's worked to make it happen.
Norton Gregory.
Good evening, Mayor Kelsch and Assembly members. My name is Norton Gregory, and I reside at 1108 Fifth Street in Douglas. I am all for the Equal Rights Ordinance, as we are all concerned about equal rights in our community. I am also concerned about our budget and how this ordinance may affect our budget, given our current fiscal crisis. However, more importantly, I am here tonight representing those in the audience and in the hallway and at home listening on the radio who are wearing yes buttons, and we are here in support of the non-discrimination ordinance. Will those in the audience who support this ordinance wearing a yes button please stand up? We are here tonight to stand together in support of this ordinance that will make the capital city a more fair, more welcoming, and more inclusive and just place for everyone to live. By passing this ordinance, you will give everyone in our community the right to seek employment, to apply for and reside in housing, and to give members of our community an opportunity to seek a happier lifestyle in the capital city. As we move forward, we continue to work together to make society a more inclusive place to be. I encourage you to show the rest of Alaska and the United States that Juneau is the champion for change and leading the way to a more just world.
Thank you, Mr. Gregory. Tom Williams.
Mr. Mayor, members of the Assembly, my name is Tom Williams. I live at 3170 Fritz Cove Road in Juneau, Alaska. While this ordinance thankfully no longer tells businesses what type of payments they must accept, the crafters of this ordinance have made it even more onerous than originally presented. Undoubtedly, this was the urging of those who feel victimized by those who disagree with their lifestyle. So now we have an ordinance that will turn the tables and allow them to potentially victimize anyone who dares to disagree with them. First of all, it is simply a political ploy to camouflage the real substance of this ordinance by duplicating or mirroring federal and state law that prohibits discrimination based on race, religion, marital status, and other issues. Trying to mirror or duplicate federal or state law only potentially complicates the enforcement of existing law. In other words, all the other protected classes were not needed. What this ordinance is really about is providing special treatment for those engaged in certain sexual behaviors, specific homosexual and bisexual behaviors, as well as those who perceive their gender to be something other than their biological gender, specifically transgender or asexual individuals. To assert otherwise is simply disingenuous. This ordinance is about requiring others to not only accept their behavior, but to silence those who disagree with them by enacting penalties against those who would have a different opinion. As such, the passage of this ordinance will have the effect of imposing a minority's moral values on the rest of the community and will open a wide door for punitive legal action to those who do not share their values. By giving gender expression special protection, it opens the door to even wider lawsuits. To tell an employer that an employee must hire and cannot fire an individual exhibiting behavior that, quote, may not conform to socially defined characteristics typically associated with either masculine or feminine behavior, is forcing business to comply, despite the effect that compliance may have on their own business. For those of you who think that giving this hammer to this select group of people will not result in egregious action, I invite you to remember the other legal cases in the lower 48. Till now, we've been very tolerant of people in this community, and I think what will happen here will you'll see a legal case against somebody. Somebody will go to prove a point, and you will cause that division. I'm certainly not, you know, we need to treat all people with respect, but I urge you not to pass this. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Ms. McDonald. Is there Caitlin McDonald? Any McDonald? Britta Johansson. Well, that takes us through the list at this stage. So public comment is complete. Mr. Keel, may I have a motion?
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. I move adoption of Ordinance Serial Number 2016-23D.
Okay. Assembly comment. Mr. Nankervis.
Objection.
Okay. Do you want to speak to that?
Yes, sir, I would. Thank you, Mr. Mayor. While I don't disagree with the intent of this ordinance, what I disagree with is how we accomplished this. As I stated last week, maybe it was 2 weeks ago, I don't remember, I thought that this was too long. I still think it's too long. My understanding is what we were trying to do was include sexual orientation and gender identity under the group of protected class people. And I thought that could have worked on with about a page. So I still am under the impression this is about 14 pages too long. I agree that we have federal law and state law in place with respect to most of this, so I'm not generally in favor of duplicating laws that are already on the books. This, I believe, does that to a large extent. When you get to page 6 of the ordinance, right at the top, it talks about refusal to permit at the expense of a person with a disability, basically to modify the apartment if they pay for it. That sounds well and good until that person leaves and it comes time to put the apartment back to how it was before the modifications were made. And I don't know about everybody else, but I know one landlord that I had before I bought my house. And I had many. I still know only one that I communicate with. So I think trying to find somebody and get that payment to restore the apartment to its original condition is wishful thinking, that's probably not going to happen. And my concern would be then that there's the potential to raise what I would call the surety deposit, damage deposit, whatever you call it, like that. It's been a long time since I've rented. Now I forgot what they're called. That deposit to such an extent for a handicapped person that you would be precluding them from getting into the apartment. And I just learned today that you can't do that because the feds say you can't do that. That was news to me today. So you have to do this stuff with no guarantee that you're going to get repaid after you've made the modifications. I don't like that. Under 4105020, line 18 on the page, it says that a place of public accommodations cannot decide based on religion who may or may not rent their public accommodation, which is listed in the definitions, which means that churches would have to rent to, well, let's say, satanic groups, since that's in the news lately. If they rent rooms and a satanic group comes in and says, we would like to rent your room, okay, according to this law, we're going to have to do that. That's the way I read it. Hey, we have already carved out exceptions to this. On the next page, 7 of 15, under lines 7, 8, 9, 10, 11 here, it says that a physical fitness facility may limit public accommodation to a single gender, which is, I think what we're talking about is women's gyms, which we currently have, and we can do that. But we've made an exemption already to it. On page 8 of 15, under line 5, it says the provisions of 4105 shall not apply to a rental of a room or rooms in a dwelling unit actually occupied by the owner or lessee, which means if you have a, quote, mother-in-law's apartment, you don't get to decide who lives in that. So let's say Jerry, who fishes, decides to build a mother-in-law's apartment. I'm gone half the week. My wife goes to rent it. And a guy shows up with swastika tattoos, teardrops, and a spiderweb tattoo on his arm. And he wants to rent it. My wife thinks, well, my husband's gone half the time and he's sharing the same driveway with me. Well, I guess I have to. So there we go. And I don't think that's the intent of this. I really don't think that was the intent of this. But that's what I see happening. I want to give you a short little story. Relative to page 11 of 15. At the very top, it says, aiding, abetting, or coercing a violation. It's unlawful for any person to aid, abet, incite, compel, or coerce the doing of an act forbidden under this chapter or attempt to do so. Not exactly the same, but my story, but I think the relevance and the similarity won't be lost. I was once upon a time, years ago, visiting with my sister and brother-in-law, having dinner with them in their home when there was a knock on the home. My brother-in-law said, come in, because that was the practice. People knocked on your door, you let him in. While we were at the table, a drunk young man came in and said, I will kill you for certain reasons, which I won't get into now. He was drunk, threatened to kill my brother-in-law and I, and then left the apartment. My brother-in-law looked at me and said, can you believe that? And my comment was, what? You wouldn't do that in my house and walk back out the door. Well, I guess that could be because he went and chased him down, and I got a nasty look from my sister-in-law, which I earned. But I wasn't trying to incite, compel, or aid him in any way. But that comment definitely sent him out the door. Now, I could be, or someone in a similar situation, could be aiding, abetting, or coercing a violation. And again, I don't disagree with the intent of this. I think the intent is well-intended. But I disagree with the steps that we go to, and my concern with supporting this and the way it's written and as lengthy as it is would be that I would fall into the sand trap that I often talk about
which is the ends justifying the means. And I just can't do it the way it's structured right now. Thank you, Mr. Mayor.
Further discussion? Ms. Stroll?
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. If you'll indulge me a moment to speak to this motion. And because of my sister and her partner, Rose, who's a very important part of my family, this hits close to home. So I'm going to read my remarks briefly. They're brief remarks. We may not have a lot of fun at our long meetings, but every now and then we have an occasion to have a rewarding moments where we get to make a principal statement by our actions. We have heard from residents that have lost their jobs and have been evicted because of who they love and who they live with, and that's outright discrimination. After decades of the civil rights movement, discrimination of others is not who we are as Americans, nor is it who we are as Alaskans. And now with this ordinance, it's not who we are as a community. In a community built on diverse cultures, and in a place that honors civil rights activist Elizabeth Radovich, who worked on behalf of equality for Alaska Natives, this anti-discrimination ordinance is well past due. I am very proud this evening to vote yes on ordinance 2016-23D. Thank you.
Further assembly comments? Mr. Gill?
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. Just to briefly respond to some of the concerns, the section on allowing modification of a rental to accommodate folks with disabilities was copied, I believe, verbatim from the state's equal rights law. So while I understand the objection on principle to doing the same thing in two different places in the law, the state and at the city level, if the state law hasn't raised security deposits, I'm very confident that this one will not. With regard similarly to public accommodations and renting out facilities, again, the state law prohibits discrimination in public accommodation based on religion. So that's a situation that we have in Alaska law today and would not be a material change here. With regard to the carve-out for renting a bedroom in the dwelling unit you occupy versus a mother-in-law apartment, that was a policy decision, and I understand the objection. With mother-in-law apartments, my understanding of how we permit them is that they have to be separate dwelling units. They need their own bathrooms. They need their own doors. And when you rent a bedroom, you're in the same dwelling unit. It's a much, much closer situation. But it with regard to the reasons for which you can screen a renter can be screened for vast numbers of perfectly legitimate, valid legal reasons. You can screen a renter because they have a criminal history. You can screen a renter, certainly, if they can't pay. You can screen a renter for any number of reasons. But the big, significant change here tonight, should we pass this, and I hope we will, would be that you can't screen a renter because they're gay or because they're straight or because they happen to have the wrong gender identity for your preferences. With regard to self-defense situations, I don't think they're implicated here at all. So I'm not sure how to respond to that one. But I just wanted to sort of touch on those points and what the ordinance does and doesn't change. And so I think otherwise I've spoken a lot in favor of this and won't go on. Thank you.
Okay. Further discussion? Ms. Radoszewski.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. Forgetting my name correctly.
I know.
I'm finally so enthusiastic about that. Thank you. I just wanted to speak a little bit to, again, Mr. Nankervis, because I was surprised that this ordinance, and I've said this several times during committee meetings that maybe many of you haven't heard, but that this ordinance was 15 pages, and I too thought it would be a simpler lift to just add a gender identity, LGBTQ, but we didn't have any of this, and I think that's why it took us three committee of the wholes to go through it, and we went through it quite carefully and listened to the attorneys and the people who helped draft it about how this dovetailed with existing federal law and state law, and I'm satisfied that all of it is necessary, and I was concerned that we were having some unintended consequences here, but I wanted to thank everybody who worked hard on this and continued to show up and continued to organize for the community that you want to live in and to make this community a better place. And as Ms. Kroll said, it's rarely you get a chance to vote on something that is about principle and that is so clearly correct, in my view. So I thank you all for working on it for so long, and many of you for decades. Thank you.
Further discussion or comments? I do have a question of the attorney concerning the enforcement here action. Can you explain that as it's reflected in the ordinance?
Sure. This ordinance creates a private cause of action in state court. So there is no enforcement component, so no budgetary consequence as far as enforcing it on a city level. It does allow someone to bring suit in state court for a violation of the city code.
Okay. Further discussion? Clerk will please call the roll.
Ms. Becker? Ms. Becker?
Yes.
Ms. Purcell?
Yes.
Mr. Jones?
Yes.
Ms. Gledyszewski?
Yes.
Mr. Keel?
Yes.
Mr. Nankervis?
No.
Ms. Troll?
Yes.
Ms. White?
Yes.
Mayor Kelch?
Yes.
Motion carries 8-1.
Okay.
For this station comes from Sitka's Fly-In Fish-In, offering 10 oceanfront rooms near downtown with a full-service bar and restaurant, secure wireless internet, and other amenities. Information is available at flyinfishin.com.
The Rotary Club of Juneau is proud to present the 5th Annual Capital Brewfest coming September 17th at the Jack from 1 to 5 p.m. Even more brewers from across Alaska this year, as well as great local music and food. Proceeds benefit the humanitarian works of Rotary and Juneau Stop Heroin Start Talking. Come and drink beer for a cause. Tickets are limited and this event will sell out, so buy yours at capbrewfest.com.
We've been listening to the on-air broadcast of the CBJ Assembly meeting. The mayor has called for a 10-minute break, and so we'll be back in 10 minutes. You are tuned to KTOO News. The chance of precipitation tonight is 90%, low around 53 degrees. Tomorrow rain, high near 58. I hope it would be
Could hold out my arms and say I love you this much. I could tell you how long I will long for your touch. How much and how far would I go to prove the depth and the breadth of my love for you? From here to the moon and back, who else in this world will love you like that? Love everlasting, I promise you that. From here to the moon and back, here to the moon and back.
I want you to know you can always depend on promises made and love without end. No need to wonder how faithful I'll be now.
From here to the moon and back, who else in this world could love you like that? Forever and always, I'll be where you're at. From here to the moon and back, here to the moon and back.
thank heaven for you, and to God tip my hat. From here to the moon and back. Here to the moon and back.
Who will love you like
from here to the moon and back.
Walk the floor and watch the door, and in between I drink black coffee. Love's a hand-me-down broom. I'll never know a Sunday in this week. I'm talking to the shadows, 1 o'clock to four, and Lord, how slow the moments go, when all I do is pour black coffee. Since the blues caught my eye, I'm hanging out on Monday. My Sunday dreams to dry. Now a man is born to go alone.
Start with Ordinance 2015-20, Madam Clerk.
2015-20AV, an appropriation transferring to the manager the sum of $42,233 as FY16 supplemental funding for the Law Department, funding provided by the Open Space Waterfront Land Acquisition Capital Improvement Project.
Mr. Manager.
This ordinance would transfer $42,233.07 from the Open Space Waterfront Land Acquisition Capital Improvement Project to the Law Department. The funding would be used as supplemental funding for fiscal year 16 for legal representation in the case Cruise Line International Association, Alaska, and Cruise Lines International Association versus the City and Borough of Juneau, Alaska, et al. I recommend you adopt this ordinance.
Madam Clerk, is there anyone signed up for public testimony?
No additional sign-ups, sir.
Seeing none. Is there any objection? Yes, there is. So will the clerk call the roll, please? Mr. Jones, will you move it?
Thank you, Mr. Mayor.
I'm trying to get us back on time track.
That might not be possible. Mr. Mayor, I would move that the Assembly approve Ordinance 2015-20AV and would ask for unanimous consent.
There is objection. Any discussion, further discussion? Ben, clerk, call the roll, please.
Ms. White?
Yes.
Ms. Troll?
Yes.
Mr. Nankervis?
Yes.
Mr. Keel?
Yes.
Ms. Gladyszewski?
Yes.
Mr. Jones?
Yes.
Ms. Purcell?
Yes.
Ms. Becker?
Yes.
Mayor Kelch?
No.
Motion carries 8-1.
Which brings us to Ordinance 2016-09. Madam Clerk.
Ordinance 2016-09-G, an ordinance appropriating an appropriation transferring to the manager the sum of $250,000 as funding for the manager's office operating budget, funding provided by the Open Space Waterfront Land Acquisition Capital Improvement Project.
Mr. Manager.
This ordinance would appropriate $250,000 of marine passenger fees from the Open Space Waterfront Land Acquisition Capital Improvement Project in fiscal year 17. The CBJA strongly supports and welcomes cruise ship tourism and will continue to work cooperatively with the industry to address impacts caused by the visitation of approximately 1 million visitors to the CBJA per year. At the same time, CBJA must defend its marine passenger and port development fees against the constitutional challenges raised by the industry and the litigation brought by the Cruise Line International Association. These funds would be appropriated in fiscal year 17 as a reserve to be used by the city attorney at the direction of the assembly to defend the ongoing litigation by CLIA. I recommend you adopt this ordinance.
Madam Clerk, is there anyone signed up for public comment?
No, sir.
Seeing none, Ms. Purcell, will you move this, please?
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. I move that we adopt Ordinance 2016-09G and ask the Assembly for unanimous support.
Is there discussion?
Thank you. Could I be, thank you, Mr. Mayor, could I ask the staff a question?
Certainly.
Thank you. Could someone remind me how much money we're going to have left in this open space? I think you've told me before, but I know that I'm thinking about some things we might need to purchase with this, and I'd like to know if we're going to have any money at all left after we do this, the two things that we're doing here.
Mr. Mayor, there'll be approximately $1.6 million left in that reserve fund.
Any further questions or comments?
Just a comment. And that's after the 17.
That's correct.
Thank you. I don't have objection. I just.
Okay. There is objection, so the clerk will please call the roll.
Ms. Becker?
Yes.
Ms. Purcell?
Yes.
Mr. Jones?
Yes.
Ms. Fladyshevsky?
Yes.
Mr. Keel?
Yes.
Mr. Nankervis?
Yes.
Ms. Troll?
Yes.
Ms. White?
Yep.
Mayor Kelch?
No.
Motion carries 8-1.
Which brings us to Ordinance 2016-09C. Madam Clerk.
Ordinance 2016-09C, an ordinance appropriating to the manager the sum of $2 million as partial funding for the construction of the Aurora Small Boat Harbor Rebuild Project Phase 2, funding provided by the Alaska Department of Transportation, Public Facilities, Municipal Harbor Facility Grant Program.
Mr. Manager.
Grant funding in the amount of $2 million provided by the Alaska Department of Transportation and Public Facilities Municipal Harbor Facility Grant Program have been offered. Matching grant funds of $2 million have already been provided by the Harbor's Enterprise Fund balance. CBJ Docks and Harbors received notice of award of a $2 million grant fund for Phase 2 of the reef construction of Aurora Harbor. The funding would be used for a complete replacement of failing infrastructure of the main float, head floats E, F, and G, including mooring finger floats on one side and provisions for current boat shelters on the other side. This ordinance would appropriate $2 million into the overall budget of the project. I recommend you adopt this ordinance.
Is there a public comment?
No, Mr. Mayor.
Okay, seeing none, Ms. Troll, will you move this, please?
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. I move adoption of Ordinance 2016-09C and ask for unanimous consent.
Is there objection? Seeing none, motion carried. Which brings us to E, Ordinance 2016-09D. Madam Clerk.
An ordinance appropriating to the manager the sum of $76,050 as funding for enhanced security and monitoring capabilities at the downtown cruise ship docks Grant funding is provided by a U.S. Department of Homeland Security Port Security Grant.
Mr. Manager.
This ordinance would appropriate $76,050 for the design, procurement, and installation of security cameras for the new cruise ship berths. The grant funding is provided by the U.S. Department of Homeland Security Port Security Grant Program. This is an operating grant and requires a $25,350 match for a total approved project amount of $101,400. The match will be met with the DOCS Fund's existing FY17 adopted budget, thus there is no need to appropriate further funds. The project will provide greater security and monitoring capabilities consistent with federal law and the CBJ Docks and Harbors Facility Security Plan. The Docks and Harbors Board reviewed this appropriation ordinance at its July 28, 2016 regular public meeting. I recommend you adopt this ordinance.
Madam Clerk, is there anyone signed up for public comment?
No, sir.
Is there anyone in the audience that wishes to comment on this? Seeing none, Ms. Gladyszewski, will you please move this?
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. I will. I would move Ordinance 2016-9D. And ask for unanimous consent.
Is there any objection? Lots. Mr. Jones, and then Mr.
Thank you. Just an objection for a series of questions, I guess.
Certainly.
And maybe Mr. Gillette looks like he's the only one from Docks and Harbors here. So my question was, is this for ongoing monitoring or whether this is for review if something happens? And the reason I ask is staff time for monitoring, is it monitored 24/7? That's question one, and I'll let you answer that one, and then maybe I can go to number two.
Well, the security camera system, we already have part of it in place. This is the second phase of it for the cruise ship, cruise ship docks. We have some that are on the docks. We don't have anyone sitting and watching a TV screen. Everything is recorded. And if we have an incident, then we can go back to the recordings and look for it.
I can follow up, Mr. Mayor.
Please.
Yes, then the question comes in, and it's been raised on a lot of other issues in terms of storage. How long do you keep it? Who has access to review it? Is it accessible by the cruise lines or only by the police? I guess maybe that's some legal questions about the usefulness of it, but storage, how long do you keep it? If there are civil cases, do you have to hang on to some of that stuff for years?
We're looking at we have security cameras in all of our harbors, and those are questions that we're still, grappling with, but, been working with the Coast Guard and the police to make sure that what we are doing and where we're placing them would be beneficial to them because there are two agencies that have expressed an interest in it. I can't really speak to whether or not the cruise ships would have access to them other than I would assume it's public information like anything else that we have, but that would be a legal question, I guess.
If I could ask the attorney to respond to that, is it public information? I would assume that security cameras for purposes of, monitoring for safety, those kinds of issues, that's not necessarily available to the public.
It is a public record, okay. It, depending, especially if it is pointed to an area that is open to the public. As a general concept, yes, they would all be public records. There may be some instances where there is an exception that applies, that it would not be released at that time. Maybe it's related to a pending case, or maybe there's something on it that triggers a privacy concern or an enforcement issue. Those exemptions are carved out in state law, but as a general proposition, it would be a public record.
And as a follow-up, is there a generally accepted length of time to hang on to that? If 3 months from the time of video was taken and somebody files some suit to which that might be useful, I can see then you'd hang on to that forever. But would it be available in 3 months? Would it be available in 6 months? Is it
only going to, is there a standard for which it's kept?
There is likely a standard. I don't know what that would be off the top of my head, but we have standards. We have a record retention policy for all of our public records. Since this would be a type of public record, we would, if it's not already covered by that document, create a category for it.
And is this sufficient enough money to hang on to that amount of video 24/7 for that long a period of time? I mean, storage is cheap, but not that cheap.
That I would not be able to answer.
Mr. Nankervis.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. Yeah, this is, again, you've heard me say it before, this is another example of where the federal government mandates something but doesn't pay for it, which I generally rail at. But what I don't like about it, surprisingly, for an ex-police officer, I don't like the fact that the government puts in cameras and looks at people. I don't like that. When I went to London, I stopped at one point and looked around, and I could count three cameras at any one time recording me. It's going to get to the point you can't pass gas without somebody watching you do that. I think you just give little parts of your – I think I was speaking right now. Thank you. I think you're giving up little parts of what makes it great to be in America is Big Brother not watching you all the time, whether you're doing something right or not. And again, it sounds funny to hear that coming from a cop, but I don't think we as a government need to be watching everything that people are doing, and you don't get it back once it goes away. Thank you.
Further discussion. Mr. Troll.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. If I just might ask a question of staff, I don't know who can answer this, but the cruise ship industry, they want these cameras, I assume, that this is a request that even though it's going through federal process, it is something that the industry desires to have.
I'm not sure that the industry desires. What's driving it is Homeland Security and our port facility security plan, which is approved by the Coast Guard. So it's the Coast Guard that's driving us to provide security on our facilities, and this is part of that plan.
Okay, thanks.
Ms. Becker.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. If it's the Homeland Security who would like to have this, then I would assume they will be monitoring it, or it will be used to be looked at after a crime is committed and they want to find out who did it, if they're not going to watch it all the time.
Well, I'm not sure that the federal Homeland Security Department will be watching this. They're providing funds for it because it falls under the criteria to apply for local security, programs. And that's where the grant program comes. But it's for our method of watching and securing the facility that is handed down, the rules handed down by the Coast Guard. We've also said because there's, interest has been expressed by the police department to have access to that, we've, consulted with them in terms of where we place these cameras and things, so that would be a benefit to them as well.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. What has triggered this? In other words, we've had docks for a long time and haven't had cameras on them. So is someone requiring this, or we've promised to do it as part of a plan, or what exactly has triggered?
Well, actually, we have had cameras for quite a while, a number of years. I've been with Docks and Harbors for 8 years, and they were there when I came on, and they were there for a number of years before that. We had cameras underneath the docks. We're no longer need to have that. Actually, moving the vessels out from our dock face has eliminated the need for that. There, we also had cameras in the parking garage with the thought somebody could go into the parking garage, and it's so close to the ship that, blast or something could impact the ship. By moving the ships offshore, we've lessened that risk, and we've eliminated the cameras under the dock, and we've eliminated the cameras within the parking garage. So our cameras are primarily focused on the bridge that goes to the ramps that access the ship, and just up and down the line of the dock, and then down on the berths themselves, the new floating berths.
And then if you've had them for so long, how long, what do you currently do with all that video? Do you keep it for five days, 2 days, 1 day?
about 2 weeks to a month. Different systems over time has been adjusted. And, you know, that is one of the questions that has come up. And we've been meeting with MIS to talk about, you know, how we look at all of our cameras, not just these downtown ones. But, you know, we don't feel we need to keep it for years unless there's a mandate from law or something. But it's you know, usually it's 2 weeks to a month.
Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. I have the boring question after all these fascinating questions. The manager's report says that the match is going to be from existing authorized budget. The fiscal note says it's going to come from the Docks and Harbors fund balance. Is our match staff time? Is it cash? And is it coming out of the fund balance or what we already appropriated to spend this year?
I believe it's out of the FY17 budget out for docs.
And is it in the form of money for installation and procurement, or is it staff time? Or okay,
it's for procurement. For the you know, the system's going to be designed by a an electrical engineer, and then it's going to be installed by a contractor, and the equipment will be purchased, and it's for that those purposes.
Thank you.
Further questions? Mr. Nankervis, would you please move this motion?
Mr. Mayor, I did. I moved it.
You did? Sorry, I'm just zoning out here. I would like to make a comment on this. As someone that worked on the docks and as someone responsible for security for Customs and Border Protection down here, when our vehicle was damaged, majorly damaged, these videos were invaluable in tracing down who did it, when they did it, and how it happened. So I think for security purposes, this has a lot of value, and I would speak in favor of this motion. So, any further discussion? Seeing none, is there objection? Objection is no. No. Please call the roll.
Ms. Becker?
Yes.
Ms. Purcell?
Yes.
Mr. Jones?
Yes.
Ms. Gladyszewski?
Yes.
Mr. Keel?
Yes.
Mr. Nankervis?
No.
Ms. Troll?
Yes.
Ms. White?
Yes.
Mayor Kelch?
Yes.
Motion carries 8-1.
All right, ordinance 2016-22. Madam Clerk.
An ordinance amending the business regulation code relating to marijuana and alcohol.
Mr. Manager.
This ordinance would accomplish two things. First, an update to the alcohol license review process by removing antiquated language and clarifying the grounds for protest consistent with state law. And second, providing a process for the review of state marijuana establishment license applications similar to the process used by the CBJ to review alcohol license applications. With respect to the review of alcohol license applications, the suggested changes do not limit or change the scope of review the Assembly currently has under the code, as provided by state law. With respect to the review of marijuana license applications, the proposed review process is designed to avoid duplicating the state's regulation on license restrictions and to create a process for the CBJ that complies with the local government protest process. The Assembly Human Resources Committee will be reviewing this ordinance at its meeting immediately prior preceding this Assembly meeting. I recommend you adopt this ordinance.
Is there anyone here wishing to speak on this for public comment? Now, Mr. Nankervis, will you please move this?
Mr. Mayor, I would move adoption of Ordinance 2016-22, and I would speak against my motion for purposes of a question.
Mr. Dan Kerfels.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. On back looking at the ordinance, way back on page 115 of our packet, page 2, the second sentence, item number 1, says, failure of the applicant to secure a local license or permit, or if the applicant is in violation of any applicable local license or permit. I believe, Madam Attorney, that this is speaking to the alcohol as well, and we don't have a local license or permit for the alcohol. So am I reading this incorrectly?
No, license could probably be taken out. Permit should remain in case there's a conditional use permit or land use permit that applies.
Okay. Does every liquor license have some sort of permit that isn't state that the city issues? Let me restate that. I don't think that's the case. But the way this reads, it would have to have a permit or a license.
Failure to secure a permit, if there's no need to secure the permit, then there's nothing to secure. So I don't think that you would need to add any other language other than removing license, the references to the license. That is correct. There is no license, local license for an alcohol.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. That's your legal opinion on this, correct?
Yes.
Okay. Thank you. I will remove my objection, and I would move this ordinance and ask for unanimous consent.
Yeah. Mr. Jones?
Mr. Mayor, as the manager stated, this was reviewed by the Human Resources Committee earlier. There were two issues that were raised, and I will speak, and Ms. Glaszewski can also speak if I don't portray her concerns directly. But in the manager's report, it basically says that this does not limit or change the scope of review of the assembly currently under the codes provided by state law. And the way this ordinance was presented to us, that was hard to understand and hard to know is an accurate statement. And the reason is that normally when we get an ordinance that's drastically changed, we get the strikeouts and the ads, so we see what used to be there. But in this ordinance under Section 3, it says it repeals 2025-025 and then reenacts it. But we don't know what was repealed because we were not provided with 2025-025. Ms. McEwen said that it was told us sort of what the changes were, but we didn't see that. And that was a concern to the Human Resources Committee. We didn't take any action. We would recommend it back to the Assembly for discussion, which we're having. But it was troubling to us that we had a statement that says this doesn't change anything, but the section that was drastically changed, we really don't know what was changed because it was repealed, and then all we see is a new enactment. So that was a concern, and I just wanted to bring that forward to the rest of the body.
Ms. Bradyshevsky.
No, Ms. Mead was Mr. Jones accurately explained what I was fearing. We didn't really see the prior language.
So my apologies. It's the prior language that's currently in code. So I didn't include it because it was a massive overhaul, meaning the entire ordinance, that entire code section was being repealed. So our normal practice when that's happening is just to repeal and reenact. So next time I'll give you the full. But I'll tell you that what I meant by that was under current code, it has things like the character and public interest of the surrounding neighborhood. First, under current code, the alcohol protest section allows you, it splits your protest into two pieces, but it doesn't really make any sense as currently written. So there's one listing of kind of touchy-feely type of things that you can consider, like the character of the neighborhood and whether there's law enforcement problems in the area. And then there's a B section of the code that is tied to more objective things like whether someone is delinquent in sales tax and property tax. That distinction didn't make a lot of sense, so it was eliminated. The call out of things like that spoke to zoning laws, for example, the character of the neighborhood is covered by our zoning law. You have already made a determination whether or not a liquor establishment can be in certain zones, And in those that you want a conditional use permit to apply, you've already provided for that by law. And if someone is not in compliance with that, this would allow you to protest. So the specific things that are talked about, the adequacy of parking facilities, that's another one. I could go through the list and tell you what the specific sections, but another one is the adequacy of parking facilities. That's dealt with in your zoning code. And this allows you to protest if someone is in violation of your zoning code. So this language was a really old language. Our code has changed since then, and some of the things that were covered in the protest piece are covered in other pieces of our code. This ordinance now, as it's written, encompasses the same things. It doesn't. You still have the ability to protest for all of the same grounds you currently have, and then there's a general catch-all. That says you can protest for any reason that you deem reasonable. So that it doesn't, that's what I meant by it doesn't change what you can currently protest under, protest a liquor license for under state law.
Any further discussion, Mr. Nankervis?
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. I think I actually need to amend my motion since I asked if that word license needed to be in page 2, line 3, and the attorney said it did not, since we do not have that license, my motion would be to approve as amended. That amendment would be removing the word license in line 3, page 2 of ordinance 2016-22.
All right. Well, let's vote on the...
In line 1.
Let's vote on the amendment first. So can we put it... We have a motion... You need to have an amendment if you want to take that license out of there. Can you move to take the word license out of this motion?
And the word or.
Excuse me, Mr. Mayor, you lost me. I was trying to listen with my left ear to something else, okay. And you with the right ear.
You have a motion. We have a motion before us. You wish to amend it, correct?
Correct.
Take out the word license?
Yes.
Would you please?
Separate, yeah.
Make it.
Okay.
Move to amend the motion by taking out the word license so it's clear and
Hey, not used to doing these wordsmithing. So I would move my amendment first, which is that we remove the word license on page 2, line 3 of the ordinance 2016-22. And I would also like to follow that up with a question if possible.
You may.
And that is to Madam Attorney whether I need to remove that next license, local license, in line 4 as well.
The word license should be removed from everywhere in subsection 1.
Thank you. So
your motion.
That would be my motion.
Okay. We have an amendment for us to remove the word license from this motion. Ms. Kladishus?
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. The motion needs to be... You need to remove license or on line 3 and license or on line 4. You need the or to be gone as well.
Thank you, Ms.
Glashevsky.
You got it.
Okay.
We got rid of the license and we got rid of the or in this amendment so far. Is there further discussion?
I'm not going to put my or in.
Seeing none, all those in favor of the amendment, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed? Was unanimous, Madam Clerk. We're back to the main motion as amended. Is there objection to the main motion, ordinance 2016-22, as amended? Seeing no objection, motion carries. Okay. All right. We are on H, correct?
Correct.
Ordinance 2016-27. Madam Clerk.
An ordinance authorizing the manager to convey Lot 6 and Lot 7 of the Renninger subdivision to the Alaska Housing Development Corporation.
Mr. Manager.
At the Assembly's direction, staff solicited letters of interest for the disposal of 6 lots in the new Renninger subdivision. The Lands Committee reviewed four proposals at its April 25th, 2016 meeting and as a result directed staff to work with the Affordable Housing Development Corporation to purchase two of the lots at fair market value. At its May 16th, 2016 meeting, the Lands Committee passed a motion of support for the sale of lots 6 and 7 to AHDC. At its meeting on May 23rd, the Assembly authorized the city manager to negotiate the sale. This ordinance would authorize the city manager to finalize negotiations and enter into an agreement with AHDC for the sale of the two lots at fair market value and provides for certain terms in the event the sale is financed by the CBJ. I recommend you adopt this ordinance.
Madam Clerk, is there any public comment?
No, sir.
Or anyone signed up? All right. Ms. Becker, will you please move this?
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. I move Ordinance 2016-27 and ask for unanimous consent.
Sir, Mr. Jones.
Just a question. The ordinance states that the terms, if the city finances, is they would make monthly or other arrangements, pay 10% interest. My question just simply was, those payments and interest go back into the lands fund?
That's correct.
Or does it go somewhere else?
The lands fund.
Go back into the lands fund. Thank you. I don't have any objection.
See no objection. The motion is carried. It brings us to I. Ordinance 2016-28. Madam Clerk.
An ordinance amending the City and Borough Code relating to criminal offenses and penalties.
Mr. Manager.
The primary purpose of this ordinance is to amend the City and Borough Code consistent with changes made by the state with the Omnibus Crime Bill SB 91. Per SB 91, if state law provides for a comparable state offense, a municipality may not impose a greater punishment by ordinance than that imposed for a violation of the similar state law. This requirement under SB 91 specifically applies to home rule municipalities such as the CBJ. This ordinance makes a few additional housekeeping changes outlined in the memorandum from the city attorney included in your packet. I recommend you adopt this ordinance.
Is there anyone sign up for public comment?
No, sir.
Ms. White?
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. I move that the Assembly adopt Ordinance 2016-28 and ask for unanimous consent.
Mr. Keel.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. I have a question for the city attorney. Page 3 of the ordinance, Section 3, we talk about the remedies if a fine or restitution don't get paid, and it includes imprisonment for non-payment, both when payment is a condition of probation, which I get, but also when it's not. And it's entirely possible I missed that section of SB 91. Is that something that is contained within SB 91, imprisonment for non-payment, when we're not talking about a parole condition, probation condition?
This is language from state law, not in SB 91, existing state law. The reason why I am recommending including it in our code is just to make very clear that the CBJ, when we are imposing and enforcing the fines imposed in our cases, that we hold the same rights and remedies that the state holds with respect to state crim cases.
Okay. I was unaware that that was in existing state law. Does it exist currently in CBJ code anywhere?
No. One of the main components of SB 91, one of the main things that it does is it radically changes the sentencing structure, if you will, for many CBJ crimes. And the change is imprisonment for anything but a violent act is no longer an option. So sentencing someone to jail for certain crimes is either eliminated or is greatly reduced. At the same time, the fine structure, the fines that the state will impose for violations of criminal law has been increased because that has been determined to be more effective, a more effective tool at trying to curb recidivism. I can't get this word right today.
Deterrent.
Recidivism.
Thank you. That one. And so that's one of the philosophies that's embodied in SB 91. Under state law, under SB 91, if someone doesn't pay a fine, that whole count is transferred to the Department of Law. That's not an option for the CBJ. Our fines are not going to be transferred to the Department of Law for enforcement. So we need to carve out for ourselves and be very specific that we have the same rights as the Department of Law does with respect to the enforcement of fines.
Thank you. That answers the question as to why it's in there. I object to it being in there. Much of the research behind SB 91 and the reasoning behind the state's action is that prison's a pretty crummy way of getting people not to do the things we're mad at them about. People we're scared of and need to keep separated from society. We're great, but that shift for things that are not violent is in favor of a much more certain and immediate punishment because it's much cheaper and easier to find somebody than it is to lock them up. It also saves a lot of money on the back end because prison costs a fortune. And so to then turn around on the back end and go, but if you don't pay the fine, you're going to prison anyway, and we'll foot the bill for that, by the way, doesn't make sense to me. What makes sense to me is the new section D here on the next page at line 7, which gives us every tool in the book, whatever we've got under for criminal fines and also civil judgment tools, and doesn't limit the authority of the court to enforce fines, and courts have all sorts of methods. So I didn't write an amendment. I didn't fully understand this one earlier, but I am not okay with imprisonment for nonpayment unless the judge made it a condition of probation. So I apologize for not having amendment language handy.
Madam Attorney?
I just wanted to, I don't know if this will help Mr. Keel, but the payment of the fine, if it is part of a sentence, is always a condition of probation. The satisfaction of the sentence is the condition of probation. That is always the case. Two, the court could not imprison someone for an inability to pay. So an inability to pay is not who we're not who this is directed at. It's directed at someone who is a bad actor who refuses to either pay restitution or to satisfy the fine for no reason other than they're just not going to do it. And while we do have the civil enforcement tools, which we're adding as well, they're not always successful. And sometimes it's difficult to administer. It's not straightforward. Sometimes we have, for example, sales tax cases where we have a judgment against someone and the right to go get the money, but the money is not easy to find. So it requires a lot of process to do that.
If I may, Mr. Mayor, I'm quite confused. If paying your fine is always a condition of probation, why do we need this at all?
Because There's another, there, some of this will come up when we talk on the 31st, but right now, the way that the fines, and this is caused in part because of the mechanics of how some of this works. So right now, if someone is ordered to pay a fine in a CBJ case, they're ordered to pay it to the clerk's office, or sometimes cost of imprisonment to the CBJ, but most likely to the clerk's office. What we are doing in our cases is we are asking the court to put defendants who are sentenced to pay a fine on a payment schedule, to pay a certain amount of the fine every month. And the reason why we do that is because otherwise what happens is someone ends probation. That's when we get notice from the court that so-and-so hasn't paid. And by then it's too late because you can't sentence someone to imprisonment once probation is over. That's the court's, the jurisdiction is over. So by having someone required to make monthly payments, we can monitor that. But we have no way to monitor that because the court has no way to track it. So we're trying to figure out a makeshift process over here, but we don't have that yet. So that's why we can't wait until probation is over. It's not, we don't have the same tools.
When probation is over, do they still have a public defender, the poor client?
No.
So then the notion that they'll go through this process described to show that their non-payment is due to inability to pay. How are they going to pay a lawyer to help them through that process? I mean, practically speaking, that's not likely to work.
Well, I'm sorry if I didn't make this clear. We have no ability as the prosecutors to ask the court to impose an imprisonment sentence for failure to not pay if probation is over. There's no jurisdiction at that point, so it doesn't matter if they haven't paid it. If we haven't caught it and we haven't asked the court. And I will also tell you that as when I was a prosecutor, on not more than one occasion, a defendant asked, I would rather do a couple days than pay this restitution order. And the court would often let them. So, I mean, it's not, I know that that's, is neither here nor there. I just wanted to throw that out there. But we don't have any ability after the case is over to ask for someone to be sent to jail for non-payment of fines.
Right. Thank you, Mr. Mayor. You say this doesn't apply to people who have an inability to pay. What happens to people who have an inability to pay, and how is that determined? And
it's up to the court. It's up to the court, and I'll give you an example. We have a sales tax case from 2013-2014 where the defendant, it was criminally charged, and the defendant was ordered to pay somewhere in the neighborhood of $130,000 in delinquent sales tax. And he came, at first he was on a reasonable payment plan, he fell behind, there was a petition to revoke his probation, and he came in and made an argument to the court that he didn't have the ability to pay. And on this $130,000 restitution order, the court ordered him to pay a few hundred dollars a month and then extended probation for a certain period of time. We can't extend probation under SB 91 the way that it used to work. So honestly, I don't know what will happen if someone doesn't have the ability to pay. The court might work with them to do something else. Maybe it will be converted to community work service. I think that's one of the things that just hasn't really been worked out process-wise yet.
Mr. Nankervis.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. I have several questions as well. On page one for the attorney, on page one, near the bottom at line, I think about 23, it says 1 year if the conviction is for a crime. So my question to you is, are there times we have any Class A misdemeanors that are more than 1 year imprisonment?
No. So what this says is...
Excuse me, I got to backtrack for just a second. The sentence before it says may not be more than 1 year if, which leads me to believe that if it doesn't fall under this, it can be more than a year. And I don't think that's the case.
No. So the term of imprisonment imposed may not be more than 1 year. It cannot ever be more than 1 year. If the conviction is for a crime, The term imprisonment may not be one more than, and then there's an A and a B and a, I think a C, an A and a B. For most A misdemeanors, it's now 30 days. There are a few limited circumstances where it can be up to 1 year, and that is if the mandatory sentence is more than 30 days. And a good example of that is an assault against a police officer carries a mandatory minimum that is higher than 30 days. In that case, the court has can impose a sentence up to 1 year. Or if an aggravator is either stipulated to or during a trial the prosecutor proves to the jury that an aggravator applies, for example, that the crime, the act that was committed was one of the worst of its class. It was a very bad assault. It was, that's still a misdemeanor assault, or they stole, you know, up to the threshold before it became a felony. The court can also impose up to 1 year if the defendant has a history of that of offending that particular crime. If it is an assault conviction, or if it is one of the other convictions, these are mostly sex crimes in subsection 5. Otherwise, it's capped at 30 days.
Okay. Well, if I may, Mr. Mayor, just continue with my several questions. Sorry, the wording just confused me because it seemed to imply that there were ways that you would end up being in jail more than a year on a misdemeanor, and I didn't think that was what was intended. Okay, on page 3, the very last sentence says that a term of imprisonment may not exceed 1 day for each $50 of the unpaid portion, which is basically what you're saying is $50 a day. So what is the cost of lodging somebody at Lemon Creek Correctional Center for 1 day to the city right now?
To the city? I can tell you that. Not off the top of my head, however. We pay our jail budget. When I divide our jail budget by the number of man days, that's what they're called, it's 216 man days for the amount, so $216.
Okay, so for every $50 that we're making them pay, we're subsidizing to the tune of 170.
Yeah.
That math seems backwards to me.
This is the cap that state law allows.
For charging them?
Correct.
So
someone who is sentenced to jail has to pay the cost of imprisonment. They are ordered to pay the cost of imprisonment to the CBJ. They have to pay for their jail stay.
And we can only charge them $50 a day for that stay that costs $200.
No. This says that the court, if the court is converting someone's fine to jail sentence, they get $50 credit for every day served.
Okay, that's a little different than the way I read it. Thank you. And I guess lastly, before I move on to somebody else's, I am not real pleased with what SB 21 does, and I'm not real pleased with what it does to us either. I think in layman's terms, if you didn't kick my dog when you stole my lawnmower, you get to go home with an ankle bracelet, sit on the Barca lounger with a remote. And if you don't pay, well, maybe you don't have to, because if we don't have the option of sticking you in the jail when you didn't pay, your fines or your restitution for that, you just get to sit and watch some more TV on the Barca lounger. And I think we've severely dented our ability to have somebody be accountable for what they've done in many instances. Thank you.
Is there further discussion?
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. I took the opportunity to write up or to draft out the amendments. Let me offer this. This is on page 3 of the ordinance, at line, well, it's right between 12 and 13. So I move that on that line we strike the words, "The court may order the defendant to show cause why the defendant should not be sentenced to imprisonment for nonpayment." And then, in addition to striking those words, if you go down to line 15, between probation and may, insert the words "the court." So what that ends up doing is saying that if a defendant defaults, doesn't pay their fines or restitution, and it's a condition of probation, the court can revoke it, can jail them, et cetera. But it doesn't give us the ability to go back to the debtor's prison approach to getting people to pay. Because I went through the Bill of Rights with my daughters at the breakfast table yesterday. It was not their idea of a fun Sunday morning. And we talked about debtor's prisons. So I move that amendment.
Yeah. Other discussion on the amendment?
Just wonder what you added. I didn't catch what word you added.
For the sake of the grammar working, there on line 15, after the word probation, you'd insert the words the court, just because I struck them above.
Court.
Yeah.
Mr. Nankervis?
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. Just for clarification again, then, for the maker of the motion, one, two, three, the three sentences above that were stricken. Did I get that right? Strike through on all those and then just start anew with after the words the defendant on page 15 with capital T, the court.
I apologize. Can I try and restate the motion, Mr. Mayor?
I'm going to do is I'm going to call for a brief at ease.
Yep.
Give us a little bit of time.
Get it in writing. Thank you.
Either find a way forward or to table it or to do something. So, 5 minutes.
Thank you.
You are tuned to KTOO News, and this has been an on-air broadcast of the CBJ Assembly meeting. The mayor has called for a brief at ease. The weather for tonight is 90% chance of precipitation, lows around 53 degrees. Tomorrow, rain and high near 58 degrees.
Places, strange sounding names, far away over the sea, those far away places with the strange sounding names are calling.
China, or maybe Siam. I wanna see for myself those faraway places I've been reading about in a book that I took.
And I keep wishing that I was somewhere else, waiting on a train, and I pray for the day that I can get underway. Search for those castles in Spain.
They call me a dreamer, and maybe I am, but I know that I'm longing to see
those faraway places. With a strange sounding name, calling me.
Mm-hmm.
I keep wishing I was somewhere else, waiting on a train. And I pray for the day when I can get underway and search for those castles in Spain.
They call me a dreamer, maybe I am. I know that I'm longing to see those faraway places with the strange sounding names.
Mr. Keel.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. I'd like to withdraw my amendment and offer a replacement.
Certainly.
So I move that we amend this ordinance by removing ordinance section 3. So that's page 3, line 2 through page 4, line 9, to be brought back as a separate ordinance. So we can give it full consideration. But that way we can move the rest of this forward tonight.
Where would you send it, sir?
I would ask that we send it to the Committee of the Whole.
Could you say where you what you're removing again?
So this section 3, so if you... Page 3 of the ordinance.
Mm-hmm, starting at A.
Starting at line 2 where it says section 3.
Okay, that...
And going down to the next page, line 9, so that we can consider that as a standalone.
Okay, you have an amendment before you. Discussion, please. Ms. Troll.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. If I could ask the city attorney for a question. Is there any time-sensitive nature that we should think about before addressing the possibility of putting this off to a committee of the whole.
For that subsection?
Right. There's nothing time sensitive about it.
I don't really know what that means. Time sensitive. There are other pieces of this ordinance that are critical and time sensitive, so it doesn't fall within that category.
That's the clarification I needed. Thank you.
Further discussion. Is there any, Mr. Nan Curvis?
I object.
All right, let me ask the question. Is there any objection to the amendment? Mr. Dan Curvis?
Mr. Mayor, I object.
All right.
Thank you for asking.
Will the clerk please call the roll?
On Amendment 1, to remove Section 3 of Ordinance 2016-28, Ms. Becker?
Yes.
Ms. Purcell?
Yes.
Mr. Jones?
No.
Ms. Gladyszewski?
Yes.
Mr. Keel?
Yes.
Mr. Nan Curvis?
No.
Ms. Troll?
Yes.
Ms. White?
No.
Mayor Kelch?
Yes.
Motion carries. 6-3.
Mayor, I will send you all in the subsection of SB 91 that encompasses this specific language so that you can see it. It's taken verbatim from the bill.
Okay. Now we're back to the main motion as amended. Is there objection?
Mr. Mayor, I have a question.
Certainly.
I don't remember if we moved it or not.
Ms. White moved it.
Okay, thank you. No objection.
Mr. Jones?
Thank you. I guess my only objection at this point is, and I realize this is time sensitive, but, you know, this whole ordinance has not been before any committee. We do have a meeting on the 31st to talk about the implications to Senate Bill 91. Yes. And I have some real concerns. And I voted no because I understand where Mr. Keel was going. That's not how I read this ordinance. I understand the issues of debtors' prison, but I didn't read that in there. But I just object to doing this tonight when we have a work session in a week. I don't think any of us fully understand what Senate Bill 91 does, and I think that's why you scheduled that particular meeting. And I know the police chief has some concerns. They're not here tonight. I'm going to object just simply. I think we may be voting in the dark here, and I don't like that.
Okay. Ms. Vladishes.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. My question was going to be about our meeting on the 31st, and what does the attorney think is the great need to do this before that meeting so we can more understand what we're talking about?
So I've spoken to the chief about SB 91, and he does have concerns about things that SB 91 does, and I'm going to be talking about some of those things on the 31st and then giving you an overview of what SB 91 does. The things in this ordinance we have no discretion to not do, where it is ratcheting down our penalties to meet state code. We cannot do otherwise. So, for example, disorderly conduct under current code is subject to a term of imprisonment, and under SB 91, it's 24 hours. That's a big change. Larceny, first-time larceny, is a B misdemeanor right now. Under SB 91, you cannot get any jail time, not imposed or suspended for a first-time larceny. We must do those things. So the difficulty that we're having right now is there are those types of changes, and there are things like VCORs, which are violating conditions of release. If the court imposes particular conditions in a case, It used to be that if the defendant violated those conditions, so for example, in a domestic violence crime, the court will order no contact with the victim. If the defendant is seen with the victim, let's say the police stops the victim for a speeding ticket and defendant's in the car, the police have the ability to arrest the defendant at that time because violating conditions of release was a separate charge, was a misdemeanor. That is no longer the case. It is a citation now. And because under our current code it remains to be misdemeanor, the court is having a lot of difficulty managing when we are charging people with that crime, which we need to be able to do. So right now there are these tortured processes in place where we charge it as it be misdemeanor, but then we have to go amend it, and then the court can't sentence except the court sentences under SB 91. This will make it a lot easier for everyone who's trying to implement SB 91 for the city right now. That's why these changes, there are some things that were housekeeping changes, which I outlined in my memo. There are some things that ratchet up. So, for example, fines under A misdemeanors, under SB 91, it went from 10 to 25,000. So that's in here. You don't have to go that high. But all of the changes that are made to the classifications of crimes and to the penalties imposed that ratchet down, we must adopt.
Okay, thank you.
Any further questions or discussion? Seeing none, will the clerk please call the roll on the ordinance as amended?
Ordinance 2016-28 as amended. Ms. Becker?
No.
Ms. Purcell?
No.
Mr. Jones?
No.
Ms. Gladyszewski?
Yes.
Mr. Keel?
Yes.
Mr. Nankervis?
Yes.
Ms. Troll?
Yes.
Ms. White?
Yes.
Mayor Kelch?
Yes.
Motion carries 6-3.
All right, we're moving right along. That was sarcasm. But unfinished business. Mr. Manager.
Mr. Mayor, in your packet, you have a resolution that would be in support of an application by Docks and Harbors to the Maritime Administration Port Conveyance Program.
Okay, should we take that up under new business?
I think that would be better than unfinished business.
Okay. All right. Let's do that. Madam Clerk, could you read that for him?
Resolution 2765, a resolution of the City and Borough of Juneau in support of the acquisition of the Auk Bay Marine Station through the Maritime Administration MRAD Port Conveyance Program.
Mr. Manager.
Mr. Mayor, on April 18th of this year, the Docks and Harbors Department learned from the U.S. Maritime Administration that the former NOAA Fisheries Lab, also known as the Auk Bay Marine Station, would be available to governmental entities through a competitive process under the Federal Port Conveyance Program. The property consists of approximately 4 acres of land, municipal buildings, a dock, and access to the ocean. It is immediately contiguous to land, tidelands, and facilities managed by CBJ and also by the University of Alaska Southeast. Both CBJ and University of Alaska agree that there are multiple benefits to having the property remain in public ownership given its prominent coastal location and long history of use by public agencies, and that it could potentially contribute to shared community goals of expanding and enhancing marine-related education, research and economic development, fisheries development, and harbor development. Both the CBJ and university submitted notices of interest to the federal government advising their intent to seek receipt of the surplus property. Given that neither party needed exclusive use of the property to achieve their desired goals, and given that the parties' intended uses were not mutually exclusive, the parties jointly requested an extension to the August 29, 2016 deadline for submission of applications with a goal of exploring mutually beneficial use of the property. But that extension request was denied by the USGSA. Docks and Harbors Board is prepared to submit a timely application to the federal government. The university is considering doing the same. Concurrently, I am attempting to negotiate a memorandum agreement with the University of Alaska president that would allow both entities to benefit from the property consistent with each entity's needs. By this resolution, the Assembly would be expressing its support for the submission of an application so that property can be secured for the mutually beneficial use by CBJ and UAS. I recommend you adopt this resolution.
Thank you, Mr. Manager. Was there any public comment?
No, Mr. Mayor.
Mr. Keel, could you move this forward for us, please?
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. I move adoption of Resolution 2765 and ask unanimous consent.
Is there any objection? Mr. Jones.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. I guess I've just been hearing that it hasn't been the best negotiations with UAS and Docks and Harbors. I'm really unclear between the interest of UAS, why the manager is negotiating with the University of Alaska president. I assume that's because University of Alaska lands is the sort of presiding body within the university system over all of the lands. UAS doesn't have, I guess, direct authority. Not seeing the application, just simply seeing the resolution, I guess I would like some discussion about what has been discussed with UAS, what has been discussed with the University of Alaska lands, what are the mutual beneficial purposes, and are those in any way explored in the application, or does the application simply say the city, borough, Docks and Harbors wants it, and we'll work with the university to use part of it? I'm really unclear about all of that. So if the city manager can explain that, it would be useful.
Mr. Manager?
Mr. Mayor, I'll try and do that concisely. I think the big picture is there have been numerous conversations between CBJ and the university, as well as the university's lands office has participated in numerous conversations between both parties and two branches of the federal government. If Docks and Harbors was to submit an application and be successful, it would be through the MARAD program. If the university was to submit an application, it would be, and if it was successful, it would be through the Department of Education. Both federal agencies have different rules that guide their consideration of the property disposal and the allowable uses of the property if it's conveyed through their program. The university has determined that the signatory authority for a memorandum of understanding or agreement would be the university president. Notwithstanding that, we have been in constant contact with the University of Alaska Southeast Chancellor and his staff. And so I think on the university side, they've had many conversations, and on the city side, we have as well. Docks and Harbors developed a plan given the short timeline, and I think the university also has a plan that probably both parties would agree more time would have been very useful, and we would have liked to have developed something more concrete. However, we didn't get a time extension, and it was a very short window to develop those applications. Recognizing that the CBJ values the university, and particularly the University of Alaska Southeast emphasis on the Southeast campus, we recognize them in all sorts of ways through our comprehensive plan, through our economic plan. We have embedded university interest into our application, and the resolution that you see tonight further states that intent to provide facility to the university if we are the successful receiving party. That's a long summary of where we are. I think it is probably fair to say from the city's standpoint that the MARAD program is more flexible, and we believe that if the property was conveyed to the city, that we would be able to allow use by the university consistent with the MARAD program, and their rules are fairly broad. However, if the university submits an application through the Department of Education program, it's likely that program is much more limited to educational uses. And so if the university is successful, there may be a much more limited or no CBJ involvement in management of the property. The resolution as drafted tonight, I think, gives me sufficient authority to enter into an MOU with the university that can provide for university use consistent with our adopted plans and our long history of supporting the university. And it could be amended in the next week depending on suggestions by the university. So it's a long story, I guess, in a lot of detail, and really the backstory is the federal government gave neither party much time to develop a complete proposal for the property. But the intent on the city side is to submit an application that would be harmonious with university use as they are able to use the facility. The lab is still a fully functioning lab and could fit well into the university's educational program. The tidelands and the dock, very similar to what we manage in Stater Harbor, and I think fit better into our program.
Just a follow-up. If Docks and Harbor submits, university submits, do they in fact submit to two different agencies, or do they in fact submit to one agency, but there are two sets of rules they have to comply with? I thought all property was sort of part of the General Services Administration at the feds, but maybe not. But how does the Department of Education and MARAD, whoever they reside in within the federal government, how do they both claim that property and can both deal with it separately? And who's the final judgment over if they both want to award to their respective groups, who's the arbiter between the two, if you know?
The arbiter is GSA.
Okay.
And the federal departments evaluate the proposals based on their departmental guidelines. So Department of Education would evaluate a university proposal, and MARAD would evaluate the city's proposal. In the end, the finding is the best interests of the United States.
I will stop there because I don't want to ever ask a question that. Right?
Yeah.
Thank you.
Sorry, I had a question and I missed the end of your answer, so you might have just answered it. They're separate. I didn't know there were two programs that we were applying to. They're applying to Department of Ed, and we're applying to the MARAD. So what's that fit? Can you explain that? And the deadlines are the same, or?
Through the mayor, the deadline is the same. It's next Monday. And it's probably a matter of semantics, but we're both applying to GSA, and we would be evaluated by the respective sponsoring federal departments.
And do they, what if they conflict and Department of Education says these guys should get it, or how does that work? Do you know?
Then GSA needs to make that determination. And so in the hopes of avoiding a conflict between the federal departments, we have tried to embed the university's interest in our application.
And if we're successful, if the Toxin Harbors Board is successful, what are there automatic obligations, or how does that work financially? What financial obligations do we have? If are we signing something in advance when we promise to do X? Does this application do that?
So the application would get us title to the property, provided that we used it consistent with the MARAD program. And if we failed to use it consistent with that program, we would have to forfeit it back to the federal government.
Ms. Stroll.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. This whole opportunity about the Auk Bay Lab sort of came up when myself and the city managers, we were meeting with the university discussing, and NOAA discussing the opportunity about trying to bring more fisheries jobs here. And, you know, the assembly, in support of the university's efforts to get a bachelor program of fisheries here at the university, we have, you know, sent a letter in support of that. So I really want to applaud Mr. Watt's efforts to truly try and make this a town and gown type of project together. I've spoken with the folks, you know, that are very interested in this property at the university, and they support this resolution. And given the timeliness of it, we need to act tonight to assure. So I think while I wish the federal government was a little bit more flexible with the deadline and departments talk to each other and we could, you know, have one concise joint application to one place, but that's not the situation we're in. So with that understanding, I see why we've gotten to the point now with this resolution. And I think we need to act on it to protect that town and gown option. Without this resolution, then we're going to be ending up, I don't know where we'll end up, in somewhere federal government nowhere's land.
Mr. Keel.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. Ms. Troll said most of what I wanted to say. The campus council has been discussing this and actually met last week and was very supportive of both the city's application and the university's application going forward, just in the hopes that the one or the other of the two entities will get it, because the part the manager left out is GSA is also going to determine whether to transfer it for a public purpose, which means for free, or whether to charge for it. So if either entity can get it for free, that's the better application to go with. But we really don't know yet which one might be successful, because no one comes to GSA but through their sponsoring bureaucracy. So certainly I actually had a follow-up conversation with the chancellor today. He's supportive of this resolution and will also proceed with the university's approach. They certainly felt that discussions about an agreement to share the property, no matter which body gets it, hopefully. We're going pretty well. And I'm looking, Keith Gerken is here from the university, and he's not grimacing when I said that the chancellor thought they were going well. So I think it's a good opportunity, and we should keep marching down the road.
Is there further discussion? Is there objection to the resolution? Seeing none, the resolution passes.
Thank you.
It is the intent of the chair to get through the two notices of appeal, the seniors' citizens' late file, and the hardship late file, the staff report, and we're going to take a break. And then we're going to talk about how long your reports are going to be after that. Okay. Notice of Appeal. Madam Clerk.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Notice of Appeal, Southeast Alaska Land Trust versus CBJ Assessor, Charitable Property Tax Exempt Status Determination.
And is this Madam Attorney or is this Mr. Manager? Madam Attorney.
On March 29, 2016, the CBJ assessor denied an application for a charitable exemption status for Southeast Alaska Land Trust pertaining to 14 parcels of land. On April 18th, a timely notice of appeal was filed. The appeal was stayed while the parties attempted to resolve the issues, but that was not successful, and the appeal is now back before the Assembly for action. In accordance with the appeal code, you must decide whether to accept or reject the appeal. If you determine, after liberally construing the appeal in favor of the appellant, that there has been a failure to preserve the rights of the appellant, that there has been a failure to comply with the appellate rules, or if the notice of appeal doesn't state grounds upon which any of the relief requested may be granted, you may reject the appeal. If the appeal is accepted, you must decide whether you will hear it yourselves or if you will assign it to a hearing officer. If you decide to hear the appeal yourselves, a presiding officer should be appointed. In hearing the appeal, you sit in your quasi-judicial capacity and must avoid discussing the case outside of the hearing process.
Thank you. The first question is whether to accept or reject the appeal. Is there any objection to accepting the appeal? I see none. The second question is whether to the Assembly will hear the appeal or assign it to a hearing officer. Is there any objection to the Assembly hearing the appeal itself? I see none. Next, we need to have a volunteer to hear this appeal from the Assembly. Mr. Keel. Being a dictator is kind of fun. All right. Next. Notice of appeal.
Notice of appeal, Nestler versus Planning Commission, U.S. 2016-0020, pet grooming and boarding.
On July 26, 2016, the Planning Commission approved an application for a pet grooming and boarding facility on Dudley Street with conditions. On August 15, 2016, a timely appeal of the conditions of the Planning Commission's decision was filed. As I just stated, you must first decide whether to accept or reject the appeal. Under the same standards mentioned just a moment ago, where you apply, you liberally construe the notice of appeal in order to preserve the rights of the appellant. If you decide to accept it, you must decide whether to hear it yourselves or appoint a hearing officer. And if you hear it yourselves, please keep in mind that you sit in your quasi-judicial capacity.
Were there changes to this?
There was a revised notice of decision that resulted in one, the first point on appeal. I believe that the agreement from the appellant is that point will be, so the notice of appeal will be amended to remove that claim, but the second point on appeal still remains.
And that is what we will be dealing with.
Correct.
If we accept it.
Correct.
Okay, is there objection to accepting the appeal? Seeing none, it is accepted. Is there objection to the Assembly hearing the appeal? Seeing none, the Assembly will hear the appeal. Do we have a volunteer? Mr. Jones? Okay. That brings us to Senior Citizens Late File Bosworth. Mr. Manager.
Mr. Mayor, in your packet you have four senior citizen property exemption late files. And in your red folder you have an updated recommendation from the Finance Department. Mr. Bartholomew is here, and I think we can bring him up to answer questions on this, should you have them. You'll note that on three of your filings, Bosworth, Poitra, and Bosworth are recommended to accept, and then on Williams and in the red folder, Powers not accept.
So the first two are to accept, the second two are not to accept, is that correct?
That's correct.
All Okay. Do we need a motion on this, or one by one, or do we need to?
One by one motion to accept or not accept the applications.
Okay, Mr. Jones, let's start with you with Mr. Bosworth.
I guess I'm not prepared to do that. I'm still trying to read the extra red folder, so I'd pass on making any motion.
Okay. Does someone want to move that, please? No one wants to move it.
I want to ask a question whenever we get to that.
Well, we should have a motion on
the
floor. Ms. Troll?
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. I move that we accept the senior citizen late file, Bosworth.
All right. Yeah. Eric. Questions or objections? Is there objection? Okay. Bosworth. Senior citizen late file is accepted. Senior citizen late file, POITRA. May we have a motion? Ms. White?
Yes, I make a motion that we accept the senior citizen late file for Quitra.
Is there objection? Late file for Quitra is accepted. Okay, senior citizen late file Williams. Remember, it must be made in the affirmative. May we have a motion, please? Ms. Becker.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. I move that we accept the late file request from James Williams, Sr.
Is there a discussion? Ms. Gladys. Yes.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. There's no reason given about not accept. I don't see why the recommendation is different here.
Would you like to hear from
I would like
Mr.
to hear
Bartholomew.
From Mr. Bartholomew. Yes, I would. Thank you, Mr. Mayor.
Through the chair, first I could just give a little background from my observations, and that has been I've been observing the senior citizen late file exemptions for the last 3 years. And the general rule was to approve late files for both senior citizen, just the core senior citizen exemption, or for a hardship exemption appeals. Starting in 2015, last year, we did reject several appeals, and there had started to be more questions from assembly members about the reasons, whether there was a reason. And the state law says you should have a good reason. It must be the assembly that makes the decision, the governing body, and then there must be a good reason for accepting a late filed appeal. And so based on that, the assessor's office has tried to delineate a subjective issue of what is a good reason. So in the case of Mr. Williams, he had received the hardship exemption in 2015. In 2016, he did timely file the assessed value of his property by the deadline, but he did not put in an application for his hardship exemption. And he did talk to the assessor's office, and he thought he had turned in the application. They had no record of it. So he submitted an application with the backup tax returns, et cetera, on August 8th. And so in this analysis, they're saying basically he missed the deadline, and that the reasoning was he missed it. There wasn't really any reasoning other than it does say here that he was confused regarding the process and what paperwork to be filed. And they're looking at that he had been through the process in 2015 and successfully received the hardship exemption last year. So that's the information as I understand it.
All right.
Follow up.
Yes.
This, you say there's, where's this language about good reason? You say there needs to be a good reason. What law, who, is that, you said that's state law, and what exactly did it say?
Yeah, and I think it pretty much states the good reason, I think, is the wording. I asked about it earlier today, but I did not go in and copy it.
And while the attorney's looking that up, can I take your question?
Every time we get a stack of these, it seems like we're not getting the message through to these people. And when someone turns 65 and comes into the sales tax office and gets their little card or something when they were getting it, did we not tell them, oh, by the way, you need to go down the hall over here? Or maybe if they go into sales tax office and they say, well, we can't help you now, they can say, but you really need to go talk to the assessor's office. We're not getting the message across, and we have to remember that we're dealing with a population that doesn't always have the best memory. They can have some significant health issues. I mean, I always looked at this as, okay, they missed the deadline, but it seems to me like we're not getting the message across that there is a deadline, that there is a process they need to follow. One of these guys even said he was in the assessor's office and was never even told. I mean, maybe if we give them something in writing somehow.
Mr. Bartholomew, did you have a reply?
Well, I think the assessor's office and the sales tax office try to communicate, try to educate. There's information on the website. I can't answer whether we track. I don't think we have the information to track people's dates and when they turn 65. Mm-hmm. So I'd have to look into that. What percentage of seniors are timely applying and what percentage are missing the deadline? I think it's a small percentage that are missing the deadline, but there are applications every year that are late. The core $150,000 exemption is a one-time application. You don't have to reapply every year. So if you do get denied one year, you come back the next year and you can ask for it. I don't think the finance department or the assessor's office has a strong position on whether these are accepted or rejected. You know, I think if they were all accepted, we'd say okay, and we would probably quit recommending anything be rejected. We'd just go through the process. The reason I was asking about the law was I was researching, can we just recommend that this be delegated to the city manager and we'll just approve them? We won't even go through a process. But state law says it must be the governing body, and we'll get the quote behind it. But that's why we're here. But if they were all just accepted, I would say great. And if we can do more education, I'll talk with them about that.
Ms. B, did you find?
Yes.
This is for Ms. Gladish, yes.
The standard is for good cause shown.
Ms. Pearl.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. The last time I remember dealing with the senior citizens late file, we kind of had a discussion about what constitutes that good cause. And we had some direction from the former city manager to, you know, try and keep it to medical disabilities or had to be out of town for some emergency to look after family members, and they missed that kind of thing. And those were pretty much automatic approvals. Where the line starts to get a little shady is when it's sort of a clerical. It's, you know, oh, they didn't put the paperwork in. They did the year before, but they didn't this year. So, you know, they dropped the ball, and it's the fact that they dropped the ball, even though they are seniors. If they've done this in previous years, you know, is that sufficient enough good reason? And so that's why I'm going to go ahead and support the staff's recommendation to deny this. It's not a lot of money, but I think we do have to put some impetus behind the terms good reason.
Okay, further discussion. Ms. Purcell.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. I'm supporting moving all of these to hearing. I think that to echo Ms. White's comments about we're looking at people who are older, have more memory problems, but I'd also like to offer a solution, and that is very a simple one. Like the sales tax payment form that says if you get in on time, you can deduct $10 or I know another amount, but I think savvy business owners, even $10, I know when I turn mine in, I like to make sure I take $10 off. It's an incentive, so people who miss that wouldn't be able to do that. I think something like that might, or maybe not to take it off, but to say if it's late, then it would be $10. A simple fine. But it would still be an incentive for people to get it done in a timely manner. And then if they do come in late, it's a simple fine. Rather than having to bring all these forward, you could deal with them directly. Thank you.
Ms. White?
Yes. I still want to, you know, I know everybody's saying listen to staff recommendations, but in our red folder, we have a letter from Mr. Williams where he's come in to the property tax office multiple times. Nobody ever said you have to fill this thing out. I mean, we've got this letter where he said he was came in on his right after his birthday, actually on his birthday, did not tell him that he had to fill out a form, came back a few days later to pay the 2015 property tax. Said it would start next year, not told that he would have to fill out a form. I mean, the message didn't get through, and the guy came into the office.
And I guess I want to clarify, too. I was mixing up Mr. Powers and Mr. Williams. So this was the first year of application for Mr. Williams. So he hadn't previously submitted an application. This was his first year, and it's the next one we'll get to is was that set of facts.
Ms. Gradishevsky.
I just wanted to say I support this. I think it's complicated forms and the government and the what date you turn, and I would be surprised if I could figure it out. So I think you kind of get one pass and one mistake, and this guy seems to me like I would going to vote for accepting this one.
Straw?
Knowing that he did not file anything the year before, 2015, says to me, okay, this wasn't just a slip-up. He didn't really understand. And he came in. So I'm going to change what my previous comment and vote to deny or to accept this late file.
In the affirmative.
In the affirmative. Thank you, Mr. Mayor.
Any further comments? Discussion? The motion on the floor is to accept the senior citizen late file from Mr. Williams. Is there objection? The motion carries. Hardship, late file, Powers.
Chair, I'll just reiterate. So the previous set of facts where I talked about that this is a situation where Mr. Powers is appealing the hardship exemption. He was granted the hardship exemption in 2015. He was in the sales tax office this year in March, filed an appeal just on his pure assessed value, filled out the paperwork, filed an appeal. The assessor's office does not think there was an application for the hardship exemption that was filed timely, and that's what was filed on July 6th. So that's the facts of this situation.
Okay. Is there a motion to put this before us? Mr. Keel.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. I move that we accept the Powers hardship exemption late file.
Is there a discussion? Ms. Wedeschefs.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. I just have a question. What is the deadline?
March 31st.
And there's no other letter from this gentleman other than what? I didn't see anything other than this summary that you guys provided. Did they provide something?
It's in the red folder.
Very difficult to read. It's very light, but
yeah, it's very light.
But it's there.
Maybe I can read it.
Oh, it's online.
No, it's handwritten.
Is there further discussion? Is there objection to the motion?
I object. I'm going to stay with staff recommendation on this one.
Okay. Clerk will call the roll, please.
The question of the late hardship exemption for Mr. Powers. Ms. Becker?
Yes.
Ms. Purcell?
Yes.
Mr. Jones?
Yes.
Ms. Gladyszewski?
Yes.
Mr. Keel?
Yes.
Mr. Nankervis?
Yes.
Ms. Troll?
No.
Ms. White?
Yes.
Mayor Kelch?
Yes.
Motion carries 8-1.
I just wanted to share.
All right. Staff reports.
Nothing further to add.
None? Yay. All right, we're going to take a 5-minute break.
Yay.
Support for this station comes from Sitka's Fly-In Fish-In, offering 10 oceanfront rooms near downtown with a full-service bar and restaurant, secure wireless internet, and other amenities. Information is available at flyinfishin.com.
And you are tuned to KTOO News. We've been listening to the on-air broadcast of the CBJ Assembly meeting, and the assembly has gone on a brief break, and we'll be back in a few minutes. The time is now 9:55, and the weather for tonight calls for precipitation, low around 53 degrees, and tomorrow rain, high near 58.
Through my robe on in the morning, watch the ring on the stove turn red, stared hypnotized in a cup of coffee, pulled on my boots and made the bed, screen door hanging off its hinges, kept banging me awake all night, as I look out the window, the only thing in sight is dry lightning on the horizon line. It's just dry lightning, and you on my mind. Chase the heat of her blood like it was the Holy Grail, send beautiful spirits into the evening pale. Our Appaloosa's kicking, kicking in the corral and smelling rain. And there's a low thunder rolling across the mesquite plain. There's dry lightning all on the horizon line. It's just dry lightning and you on my mind. Watch her as she talked to a man. The pissy yellow sun comes bringing up the day. She said, ain't nobody can give nobody what they really need anyway. Well, you get so sick of fighting, you lose your fear of the end. I can't lose your memory and the sweet smell of your skin. And it's just dry lightning on the horizon line. Yeah, it's just dry lightning and you on my mind.
See what happened with that red folder thing? We all had to stop and read it.
Yeah. All right, we're going to start back on the record. Are you ready?
Yes, sir.
I'm ready.
And we just have the manager's report, so you know, we can get going on it. 2016 Manager Award for the Arts, Eric Scott. Was the president and MC at the Juno Arts and Humanities. Arts and Education was Jim Fowler. Artist was Vera Starbart Bedard. Patron and Volunteers for the Arts was Jeff Duvernay. Art Organization Leadership was Scarlett Adams. Business Leadership in the Arts was Keith Giles. Art Entrepreneur of the Arts was Mark Kelly. Lifetime Achievement in the Arts was Skip Wallen. It was a very well-run meeting and presentation. Saturday night, I went to the Filipino Community Scholarship Awards Night. Very gracious host, excellent food, excellent program. Congratulations to the presenters and the scholars. The city received a certificate of appreciation from Litter Free. This is our 100th annual cleanup as a city. My observation on Juno's cigarette butts, which is a fairly big problem downtown. We have designated dispensers all over town for your smokes. so there is no excuse to throw them on the ground. Keep Juneau beautiful. No ifs, no ands.
No buts.
No buts. I didn't write that, but I like it. We have an event coming up called What's Shaking Juneau? And it's the Alaska Earthquake Simulator. Highlights will be if you dare to enter the quake house, you will experience a jarring 7.1 quake. Learn to stop, drop, and roll with CCFR in the fire training house. See the amazing Science of the Sphere gallery earthquake presentation at the new State Museum at 4 p.m. Safety and planning booth and presentation throughout the event will be in the K2 rooms. And get a hot dog and drink from the new Salvation Army Mobile Kitchen Unit, which is a very important asset to the town of Juneau. They can take that unit anywhere in town where there is a crisis and be able to feed people. Very important.
That's nice.
All free at the K2 and outside the new Alaska State Museum. It is Wednesday, August 31st. And Thursday, September 1st, from 11 a.m. to 7 p.m. If you bring a child, you get free admission for one adult both days at the Alaska State Museum. That's the mayor's report. Committee and liaison reports. We'll start with Mr. Jones.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. The Human Resources Committee met this evening. We took up several matters, one of which has already been dealt with. We heard from the Americans with Disability Act Committee in their annual report, and we had two vacancies to fill for terms beginning September 1, 2016 and expiring August 31st, 2019. Human Resources Committee is recommending the reappointment of Matthew McGuan and Pamela Mueller-Guy to those terms.
Is there any objections to those nominations? Seeing none, they are approved.
We also heard the annual report from the Youth Activities Board, and you'll find in the packet the information on the grants that they have issued for 2016 and 17. I'd recommend those for your reading. We also were reviewing Resolution 2761, which is reestablishing the Youth Activity Board and is cleaning up some of the language that has been sort of hanging around for quite a while. And it was referred back to us. We had already passed it out because of a substantive change. That change raised some questions, and so we are holding it in the Human Resources Committee until our next meeting. We will be getting information on the matrix and the criteria that they use and the weighting system they use for awarding grants, because that system is currently noted in the ordinance, and we want to review that. We also had two appointments to the Youth Activities Board beginning September 1, 2016, terms expiring August 31st, 2019. The Human Resources Committee is recommending the reappointment of Liz Brooks to that term and a new appointment for Bonita Nelson to those terms.
Is there any objection to those nominations? Seeing none, they are accepted.
We also reviewed the Juneau Commission on Sustainability. There was one vacancy. We had one applicant. And the Human Resources Committee is recommending the appointment of Myrna Gardner to the vacant seat on the Juneau Commission on Sustainability for a term expiring June 30, 2017.
Is there any objection to that nomination? Seeing none, it is accepted.
Thank you. We also discussed the Human Resources Committee schedule for the remainder of 2016. The only note that I would say to all of you is to remind you that sometime after the election, we will need to set the meeting of the Committee of the Whole in late November, early December, for the Planning Commission and the Hospital Board reappointments that should take place at the end of the year. In addition, board training information, Wednesday, August 24th, 2 to 3:30 here in Chambers. Thursday, August 25th from 5 to 6:30, also here in Chambers. And Tuesday, August 30th from 5 to 6:30, mainly targeted toward empowered boards and staff liaisons. That's also here in Chambers. And at the request of the mayor, I will be at all three, although most of them, hopefully, I'll only be here briefly because I have other things to do those nights. That is the Human Resources Committee. You want me to do liaison next?
Please.
Okay. Juneau Economic Development Council did not meet in August. They have a board retreat from 8 o'clock in the morning till noon on September 9th. The Commission on Aging did not meet in August. Their next meeting is September 8th. And I will be at the Marijuana Control Board meeting in Anchorage, so I will not be able to attend. The Airport Board, we dealt with the one issue of the SREB grant being pulled. And their next board meeting is September 6th, which I will attend and then go around through security and hopefully get on a plane to Anchorage if they don't take too long. One issue that is continuing to come up with the board, and I think they're a little frustrated with actually how to deal with it. I know the manager's probably aware of this. I know CDD is aware of it. But the airport owns some property across the road there around the Jordan Creek area. It is an area that is full of junk, TVs, washing machines, garbage, people's clothing. Homeless have been living in there. A lot of discussion with CDD, with the police, I think with the city manager on how to keep it clean. Can they clean it? Can they enforce it? Can they kick people out of there? Can they clear out trees so they can visually see? And that's, I think, the biggest issue is they've been told they can't. It's an adjuvant stream. There's lots of issues there. And I know the manager's aware of it, and I know CDD, but the board is pretty frustrated with the answers they're getting from everybody, and they would just like to go in there and clean that all out, and they feel that nobody's allowing them to do that. So I'm bringing that up. Hopefully the manager in his engineering capacity of wanting to solve problems can just jump right in there and solve it. And I saved the last of the Downtown Business Association. The other thing I want to dig is having a cleanup sometime in September, and I can't come up with the date, but that's part of the downtown cleanup when you were talking about cigarette butts. And I was in San Jose when San Francisco was playing in a World Series, and there was a 7.2 or 7.3 earthquake. So I don't need to go to the simulator. I've done it in live. Thank you. The Downtown Business Association did not meet in August. Some of you were at the DIG meeting when they talked about Main Street USA. Some of you were at the chamber when they talked about Main Street USA. September 29th and 30th, Main Street USA will be here in Juneau to begin a process of working with them. They are trying to schedule a meeting, I believe, for the 29th with senior staff and with as many assembly members as can be. I understand there's four of us gone, but they're still trying to set up a meeting. In addition, in your red folder is a message from me talking about Main Street USA, talking about the efforts of the Downtown Business Association to work on the downtown plan as part of the Juneau Economic Development Plan, and also a request to help them out with the Main Street USA effort to the tune of $4,500, source of the funds being the Better Capital City Fund, which I have met with the manager and with Mr. Bartholomew about. And I don't expect an answer tonight because I know it's late. I've talked to the manager and I've talked to the chair of the finance committee and have asked that this be put on the agenda for the next finance committee meeting. So you'll have a chance to look at this. I will be out of town, whether it's on the 7th or the 8th. But I will talk to the DBA and make sure that they will have some discussion with the manager, or somebody will be here to answer any of the assembly questions on that. So, and I think with that, that's all of my reports, and I will just move right on to the presiding officer's report because I can get that out of the way.
Okay.
We had the first meeting on the Meeks appeal. We have set December 19th at 5 p.m. for the hearing. December 19th is an assembly meeting and an HRC. That's why it's set for 5. And we have backed out all the other dates, so all the other dates are set. But it is December 19th is when we will actually hear that appeal as an assembly. And we're just waiting on all the other dates to sort of fall in place now that the order has been issued. And that's liaison reports, committee reports, and presiding officer reports.
Thank you, Mr. Jones. Ms. Purcell.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. I have a report to give on the local emergency planning committee. We met on August 10th. As you said, the earthquake simulator event is coming up. It will be on August 31st and September 1st. The LEPC has been working diligently to make sure that this is going to be happening and it is going to be a fun event for many school children and the general public. The LEPC also has a call out for volunteers. They're going to have a live emergency disaster drill at the airport, and they need as many people in the community to come and help with this as they can get. Volunteers are needed to assist in role-playing as injured passengers, distraught family members, and bystanders in a full-scale simulated aircraft emergency disaster exercise at the Juneau International Airport. And volunteers can send an email, either individually or groups could send an email as well, to volunteer@jnuairport.com. volunteer@jnuairport.com.
When?
That will be on September 17th. The next meeting of the Local Emergency Planning Committee is September 14th at noon. We'll be at Bartlett Regional Hospital, and that is a Wednesday. My second liaison report is for the Eagle Crest Board. At Eagle Crest, even though it's off season right now, a lot of things are happening work-wise, or getting ready for the season, load testing the lifts, brushing the ski trails. They got the nest finished, the Eagle's Nest project finished up, and the roof has been replaced. The main lodge roof repairs are in progress, and season passes go on sale September 1st. The manager has also recruited a new mechanic and is working on recruiting other seasonal hires. The next meeting for the Eagle Crest Board is Thursday, September 1st at 5:30 p.m. Here at City Hall. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Michelle. Ms. Troll.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. Starting off with my committee reports, the Lands Committee met on August 15th, and we had two agenda items before us. One was staff's evaluation of a proposal by Mr. Harris to swap some land for subdivision. They did an analysis and determined that it was not worth pursuing at this time. So the Lands Committee accepted that, but wanted to keep the door open should Mr. Harris want to come before the Lands Committee, because he was not there at the meeting. So to kind of make his case for us. But staff is not digging into it any further until somebody wants to change that. And then we also discussed the North Franklin lot, negotiated sale, and let's just put it this way, we encountered a parking bump, and we have since had a parking discussion at the Committee of the Whole, and this issue will be back before the Lands Committee on August 29th. And my liaison reports, the Affordable Housing Commission met on August 2nd. They've been spending considerable amount of time systematically going through the Housing Action Plan and identifying the different units, and now they're kind of coming together. What are our priority things we want to work on? and they're getting close, but they didn't land on some key actions. They're still discussing things. In other words, they just looked at the entire housing action plan. They're trying to narrow the scope down for where they want to focus their energy. And there was also discussion about perhaps coming back to the assembly for renewing the accessory apartment grant program because they felt it was successful. They want to do a little bit more research, get the numbers on that before coming back to us. And their next meeting is September 6th. The General Commission on Sustainability met August 10th. It was a short meeting. They quickly discussed coordinating for the upcoming energy meeting that the city of Juneau was hosting with ALMP. And while there, had a quick report from the chicken committee. And
rooster.
Yeah, they're looking at the roosters. But they had apparently a good work session, and now they are expanding, looking at chickens and roosters to farm animals. So doing more complete ordinance if you're going to propose changes for chickens. Let's look at the whole thing. So anyway, they've decided to wade in, and we will get reports as they come. And they're, let's see, and I'm not exactly sure when their next meeting is. And that's my committee and liaison reports.
Thank you. Ms. Weathershuts.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. The Public Works Committee met August 15th. There weren't any action items, but we talked about on-site wastewater treatment systems a bit. And we spent more time talking about local improvement districts, LIDs, and the engineering and public works director and staff are starting to work on trying to rationalize, standardize that process. And so they gave us some research on what contributions have been on LIDs in the past, and so they're still working on that, and we're going to hear that some more. Hopefully we'll come up with something that's standard so it's not a big it just to take out some of the variation in that process, whatever can be taken out. The Parks and Rec Advisory Committee met on August 2nd. I was not able to attend, but asked people what happened, and they talked about the six-year CIP list. There's also some trees that there's possible to be removed in the Treadwell area. So they've marked the trees so that people could go see, and if they have any comments about those trees, saving the trees or cutting the trees, they'd like to hear about it. And they talked about fireworks. Fireworks has been on their agenda. They've been talking about how to talk about fireworks already in the past. And they've decided they are going to talk about fireworks in parks on September 6th. So that's on their agenda. And that's their next meeting, September 6th. And the Bartlett Board has not met since we last met, but their next meeting is tomorrow at 5:15 in the Bartlett Hospital.
Okay. Mr. Ned Kervis.
Mr. Mayor, I have a question for Ms. Gladyshevsky.
Yep.
Has any discussion come up at the hospital regarding their... I forget what the name of that program is they call it. I'm going to call it amortization program, the regional thing was $4 million short. What has come up regarding that? Have you heard anything, Lee?
Yeah, we get an update on that sort of at every meeting. A few meetings ago, it was looking good. Yay. And then the last meeting was looking bad for passing. So right now, they're not optimistic that that's going to pass, but they'll get that money. But it's still not done.
Okay, thank you.
Mr. Nan Kerpitz.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. The Finance Committee met August 11th. We had a budget update and a message from the manager wearing the skookum tie over there. We had a FY17 and 18 budget update as a result of the state action. We talked about our budget reserves, fund balance, and the school district's shortfall as well. We briefly talked about options to address the shortfall in FY17 and agreed to come back to the September finance meeting with vetted discussion points. And along that line, Ms. Troll is going to be out of town next Wednesday, so I'm going to move the meeting to Thursday night at 5:30, and I've talked with Bob Thursday the 8th, so instead of the 7th to the 8th. So I've talked with Bob, and Monday's a holiday, so we're trying to get the word out sooner rather than later, and
Thursday works for packet preparation, with Monday being a holiday. That's works better. So, 5:30.
On the 8th.
Yes. I hope this gives everybody enough time to make some changes if necessary. I know Mr. Jones said it might be difficult.
Mr. Mayor?
Yes.
I was going to be on the phone on the 7th from Anchorage. I will try to be on the phone on the 8th, but my flight leaves at 7:50, so depending on when we board, I may not be there for the entire meeting, but I'll try to call in as much as I can. But my flight leaves at 7:50.
I'm sure that Mr. Nan Curvis, if he starts the meeting at 5:30, will have it done by 6.
I think Mr. Jones just gave us impetus.
I gave you another item on the agenda. which you said you were going to put on last, which I don't want to miss, but I will try.
And that's all I have for finance. Regarding liaison, Docks and Harbors met Thursday night. And as it relates to the Arts and Humanities Council on the 16B art stuff, the port engineer, Mr. Gillette, who has now just left us, will be inspecting the fabrication of the artwork that is in September. He will be going down to Utah to do that. They are remobilizing to do 16B2, number 2, on September 21st, as you've probably seen the barge and all that other stuff that's out in front of Aurora, and that will be moving back downtown pretty soon. The floats for Douglas Harbor are continuing to be manufactured in Seattle on Stater Harbor. Docks and Harbor directed the opening of the launch ramp based on a clause in the contract that says partial utilization. Two words, quote, the contractor is claiming that they have reached, another two words, substantial completion as defined in the contract. So there's some disagreement, and Harbor Board is disputing that it is at substantial completion. And they are working to resolve the tree issue that we've recently heard about on the trees that are on the highway side of that project. So they're working with folks to try and resolve that. Aurora Harbor, they have a plan. The Harbor Board believes they have a plan for relocating the boathouses for the construction in Aurora Harbor. They will be getting public comment on that idea before they implement it. The Docks Board approved the lease language regarding Central Council Clinkett Haida and the lease on the old Salmon Bake down on Thane Road, or the Ore House, excuse me, on Thane Road. That will be going to the Lands Committee on August 29th.
Right.
And this is probably the chair's first word on that, but that's the word I got.
I heard it earlier today. Thank you.
Okay. And the other big item on their agenda was the resolution that we just passed. And I do not have the date of their next meeting written down. That's all I have, Mr. Mayor.
Thank you, Mr. Nan Curvis. Ms. Becker.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. I also went to that Filipino dinner, which was just great. The kids were wonderful, and the parents were almost giggly. They were so excited to be there. Everyone got their pictures taken, and our mayor gave a really, really great speech.
Okay, I was waiting for that, but this is committee and liaison reports.
Oh, excuse me, Mr. Mayor. Well, you just don't know what else I'm going to say. Mr. Healy left, but we are working on setting up a date for this city school district facilities meeting. They did receive an answer to the RFP, but it seems like it's a little high, so there has to be some more discussion. And then when they do that and they try to narrow down the work that's being asked, so that might narrow down the money, then we'll get together and see that proposal. There are two forums coming up that I just know you want to go to and support those of us who are running for this office. One is the League Forum, which is on the 14th of September, right here at 7 o'clock, and the other is the Chamber Candidate Forum, which is September 22, which happens to be the last day of Southeast Conference. I don't know who's going to Southeast Conference. I was going to, but I don't know if I can now. So, but if you're here, you may want to go to the chamber and don't ask any questions. Just listen and smile.
Just smile nicely.
Listen and smile. And that's all, Mr. Mayor.
Thank you, Ms. Becker. And when you come to your comments, you can say what a great speech it was again.
I had that on my list.
All right, Ms. White.
Okay, it was you and me that were going to Southeast Conference to hang out with my friends in Petersburg. Anyway, the Aquatics Board will be meeting upstairs in room 224 at 4 p.m. tomorrow. The Planning Commission did not have a mid-month meeting, but they will be also meeting here tomorrow if anybody would like to keep me company. We'll be talking about the Stabler Point extension of the rock quarry and Sweetheart Lake, and then a couple more typical Planning Commission meetings. Travel Juno's been meeting regularly. They're also trying to do a lot of one-on-one assembly, well, maybe it's two-on-one, but meeting with assembly members individually to try to get to know them a little bit better, try to keep an open mind, remember our visitor industry pays a little bit better than one out of every $5 in sales taxes. There was a little frustrating news. It appears that July was a bit down on the heads and beds, but onward and upward, hopefully we'll have a fantastic fall. That's all I have.
Thank you, Ms. White. Mr. Keel.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. The school board has its next meeting on the 13th at Thunder Mountain High School. I mentioned that the UAS Campus Council discussed the former NOAA lab at Auk Bay, so we've dealt with that issue. The University of Alaska Board of Regents is coming to town in mid-September, and they are doing something new with this cycle of board meetings. They're having a community forum, and on September the 15th at the Gamble Spurl Center, which is the Joint Use Armory and UAS Recreation Center, at 5:30 p.m., they'll have that community forum and hear from the public. The university system is continuing what they're calling their strategic pathways effort, which is, I guess, educrat for which university within their system is going to lead which programs. Put simply, there's no better match for public administration than UAS in the capital city. There is no more efficient delivery of teacher education than UAS. But I would note that UAA and UAF both have both programs. And in the initial rounds of the strategic pathways work, the question has been left open as to where those will be headquartered. It is fair to say that turnout at UAA and UAF Board of Regent meetings is large, growing, and territorial. I encourage all my fellow assembly members, September 15th at 5:30 p.m., the UAS Gamble Spurl Center, to come out and talk with the regents about the role that UAS plays in our community, plays in the capital city, plays in our schools. I think it will be a very valuable set of conversations to have if you can make it. And then I spent the much of last week up at in Wasilla for the Alaska Municipal League's summer meeting and board of directors meeting. They were somewhat productive, which is always good. Good conversations with the governor, an excellent presentation by our finance director, as well as Ketchikan's municipal attorney on the PERS 22% rate issue, in essence urging all municipalities to stay actively involved in that, especially right now when legislators and would-be legislators are listening, but also into the coming legislative session. number of other issues that came up. Rather than list them all now, maybe I'll write up a report for everybody on what we worked on. That concludes. Oh, I'm sorry. I knew there was something else. Committee reports. The Committee of the Whole met last Monday, August 15th. In addition to work on the Equal Rights Ordinance that we dealt with tonight, we had an extensive conversation with city staff about fireworks policy, and a direction was given to staff to draft an ordinance for introduction and for public hearing and consideration, and I know we're all hearing a lot about that notion. There was a request from one committee of the whole member to have some additional public comment opportunity when that draft comes back. I followed up with the mayor, who had a better idea than mine, which was rather than trying to schedule into our fairly busy assembly and committee of the whole meeting schedule, we could have public comment sessions that aren't necessarily formally committee meetings, one somewhere out in the Mendenhall Valley, one probably here in this room, in the coming couple of months, so that there are plenty of opportunities for members of the public to talk with us once there's a draft on the table. So I will work with him and with staff to get those scheduled. Committee of the Whole also heard an update on some transportation and parking issues. And that, at long last, finishes my committee and liaison reports. Thank you, Mr. Mayor.
Thank you. Are there, does anyone have any assembly comments? Mr. Gibb.
Thank you. On the application that Docks and Harbors is putting in to MARAD for the NOAA facility, I would think and would ask the manager whether he agrees that that would be a good place to dispatch our federal lobbyist, especially on the question of whether there's a cost associated with the transfer.
I would agree, and we will do that.
Okay. And then the only other thing I have tonight, other than, you know, wanting to comment on who else is wearing a Skookum tie in the room, my personal thanks to each and every one of you for all of the effort and all of the hours you put in on the non-discrimination ordinance. I know it was a tremendous amount of additional time, and I was impressed by the diligence everyone showed. So my thanks.
Thank you, Mr. Teal. Mr. Nankervis, and then Mr. Jones.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. I was not going to say anything, but Mr. Keel's comments prompted this. At the conclusion of the Harbor Board meeting, they asked me, a board member and the port director asked me if we had a lobbyist and whether that would be a good idea, and I said I thought it would be and directed them to Mr. Manager. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Nankervis. Mr. Jones.
Thank you. I guess two questions. One to Mr. Nankervis. Did Dr. Harbor set a time for the next public meeting on the sort of development plan from Norway or from the bridge to the yacht club yet? I know they were waiting till the end of fishing season, and I just wasn't sure when that was going to be.
Through the mayor, I don't have that in my update.
Okay.
So I'm not sure, and I did not hear them discuss that last Thursday.
Okay, thanks. And then the other question, I guess this is to the manager, and I'll apologize if Ms. Gladyshevsky mentioned this during the report on the Public Works Committee, but I was in a heated conversation with several people at the Douglas Post Office the other day about the road. And I believe at the last Public Works Committee, the engineer reported that while we had approved the lease of what, $1 a year or something for our portion of the road so that the landowner could then, you know, pave the whole thing. Mr. Healy said that he was in a dispute with the lands division about whether that was a formal lease that had to come back before the committee or could be actually implemented. And I believe at that committee meeting he indicated that they had not executed the lease because of this dispute with the lands division, and these people want to know when is, they thought it was a city street, and they wanted to know why I wasn't pushing to have it paved. And It was going to get paid because we were going to approve the lease. And that was the last word I had, and Mr. Healy's not here, so I'm asking you, is that still hung up in a dispute between those two divisions?
I was asked a little over 2 weeks ago whether that needed to come back to the Assembly, and my answer was the code requires it to come back and for the Assembly to approve by ordinance. Leases only if the money hasn't been appropriated yet. This lease is $20, so I said if the money is available to pay for the $20, to prepay for the 20 years, then it does not need to come back. It was circulated to me Friday for my signature, so I know staff's already signed off on it. I don't think it's hung up anywhere.
Okay. Well, I just hope that it gets approved because the landlord, at least Mr. Healy reported, the landlord was ready to pave that street, and since I check my mail every day, I'm wearing out my shocks and tires, and I would appreciate if that gets kicked loose.
Right. Ms. Troll.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. I can have some witnesses here. I did write down, mention the Filipino scholarship dinner and the great job the mayor did.
I was going to say that.
You said it.
He was wearing a scoop and tie.
Miles ago before I
was
thinking.
I was going to say that, too.
And then my other last comment is I did attend the energy meeting. Several of you as well were there when... we hosted a discussion on the energy plan, but also hearing about ALMP's proposed diesel plant out in the valley and the whole RCA process. The room was jam-packed. It was well attended. I think Mr. Manager did a good job of facilitating the discussion. And, you know, I learned a lot from that session. And at a previous assembly meeting, I had asked that we send a letter to RCA to request for a public hearing. And my takeaway now is based on what just transpired. We got more information. We learned more about the diesel plant than we would have had through an RCA process. So thank you, Mr. Manager, for moving in that direction.
Mr. Jones?
Just on that note, and I believe I sent the link to... Ms. Troll, but I think somebody posted on Twitter that ALMP had filed 69 pages, and I think it was on a depreciation rate. That's an amazing amount of paperwork to figure out the depreciation on a piece of equipment, but I know that part's been filed. I don't know about the rate, but I didn't bother to read the 69 pages. They have made that filing. And I think at that meeting they said they were going to file the next day, and I think they did.
Any other assembly comments?
I was supposed to make the comment about
you. Can see.
No, I'm
not.
You got enough. I'm sure everyone got an invitation. I'm going to hope you have that we're going to welcome the whale on September 3 at the Bridge Park at 2 o'clock in the afternoon.
The answer is no. Did not get the invitation.
I didn't.
I guess I get to go meet the whale. I don't know. No one else.
I've already taken my picture of it, so I'm fine.
Yeah.
No. 2 o'clock?
That's what I have.
Oh, you said 2 o'clock? I wrote down noon.
Okay.
2 p.m.
Are you through? Because
I'm done.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you.
You've been. Maria?
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. Just a question about the whale. I work down there, so I drive. I will now see it every morning. What is the plan for security? So we talked about cameras with the port. Is the gate going to be locked before it's a park, or what's going to happen? Because it's just hanging out there in the parking lot right now. It's not a park.
So right now the gate should be locked at night, and it's the middle of a construction site, and it will be like that for the foreseeable future.
It'll be locked. Okay.
But we recognize that the public has a lot of interest. We're going to try and figure out some way to make some accommodation in the short run, limited times. But right now there's heavy equipment and job shacks and construction material, and it's not really a good place for the public to be wandering around.
Just one correction. The invitation speaks to 10 a.m. on September 3rd.
Oh, she wanted us to be
not,
late.
Not to.
Well, I was told to. I haven't gotten an invitation, but I got called by Jean Overstreet. She said to. Okay, yeah. Jean, I shall be talking
to our bosses.
Is it 10 a.m.?
That's what the invitation is.
My boss.
Good. Thank you, Ms. Cole.
So 10 o'clock?
10 o'clock.
All right. 10 o'clock. Right. Any other assembly comments? Continuation of public participation on non-agenda items. Madam Clerk.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I do not have anyone signed up to testify. I do know that Mr. Watt has something to add to the good of the order.
Mr. Mayor, I would just like to say for the record that we've been able to coordinate a visit from Governor Walker, special assembly meeting on September 8th at noon in assembly chambers, and we would invite the public to come and hear his message on the state budget situation. And I would acknowledge that we have a conflict with one of the candidate forums. We will be working with that forum to make sure that we can get participation from all of our assembly members and other candidates as well.
Okay, can someone send out all these dates so that we have the 3rd, the 8th, twice, the 15th? Okay. Mr. Quayle, did you stay for public participation? And is it about pedicabs?
No.
Is it about candidacy?
No.
Okay.
William Quayle, 415 Willoughby. This is about the emergency for the earthquake. It is good that the city works on getting a sheet of an emergency earthquake sheet, what for residents to have. I'll give you an example. One of the first things you do when you feel like the ground rumbling is that to turn off the gas or whatever or propane to make sure there's no fires. Second, you get up to higher ground. You have 7 minutes to get up to higher ground and make sure there is each neighborhood. This is very important. Each neighborhood should have a gathering point, okay? Because the first responders are going to be overwhelmed, okay? There's not going to be any. So your neighbors are your best friends. So it's very important that each neighborhood in Juneau has a special place where they gather together, and it's to help each other. Also, you have a list of things that you're supposed to have when you have an earthquake, you know, emergency water, emergency food, and that. And it's good that you have this as part of your emergency program. And I've gone through this taking environmental geology, and it'd be a very wise thing for the city to do. And we are in an earthquake area. It's big time. You got to make sure that. That there is at least a pamphlet or something that goes around. You might want to do it on the radio. It's for people to make sure they have this stuff ready in case there is an earthquake. So,
thank you, Mr. Quayle.
Thank you.
So, Mila, Beth, Sam, do you have anything to say?
It's been a pleasure as always.
Okay. And that's a Skookum shirt.
There's no executive session as far as I've been told. So with that, we are adjourned.
Hallelujah.
Thank you.